Wall Street and biotechnology companies have been very excited about this idea. And what essentially it is trying to pack the cells in the body in order to make them into drug factories.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Hey, May 30th, 2021. Thank you for joining me today. Very, very powerful show for you today. I was talking with somebody who's been a follower of my show for a long time before this, and I, no joke, said today, this might be one of the most important shows I've ever done. And I've never said that before. And it's only because of how much is included today in regard to two, maybe three main topics, really two important ones that we've been covering for a long time. And the information today, the science around it, the scientific studies, the peer-reviewed, random controlled trials, everything we're going to talk about is very, very clear. And it's now being backed up by some of the most, in regard to the topics we're getting into, I would argue one of the most obvious experts that should speak on this, who was actually just censored, interestingly enough. We're going to talk about infertility. We're going to talk about spike proteins and shedding of those spike proteins, as we've already talked about. What's interesting is this is something that we've talked about on this show for 6 months, maybe longer, as theoretical studies. Here's what these things are saying. What does this mean? Asking questions. And now it's funny how it's all kind of rolling over itself, even in the independent media. Suddenly kind of, you know, the mainstream will poke something out and say, look, this looks possible. And then all the other people jump in and say this. And good, I'm glad they're covering it. But this is what we should have been asking all the time. And a lot of us were. I know you guys recognize that. That's why you're here, and I appreciate that. This is an important time to question everything, not just because that's what we say, but because it's literally never been a more important time to question the validity of everything you're being told by the government, as well as being open to all possibilities about all of these discussions, not just honing in on one thing you think is the truth and never moving from that, which is what the mainstream media does. Now, I want to say two things before we get into the opening today. One, I had a really, really great time at the rally in Franklin. I thought I did a really good job on the speech. I thought we got a lot of information in there. My plan was to sort of ad lib it, and I thought I got a lot of good stuff in there. I will be having a clip of it and the entire thing, waiting for them to send that to us. They had it professionally done, so that will be released. You guys will be able to see that in general. Hopefully more of those will be happening, but I was just very proud of our area here. In trying, you know, in just taking the initiative and doing things like this. And it was a pretty good turnout. Now, on top of that, I also want to make a quick note for those that have been following what we've been doing on the pirate streams. We've been broadcasting on the main channel for like four or five shows straight now. And I want to explain why that is. I'm not stopping what I'm doing. I'm just actually surprised that they have, I mean, they've right now one more strike and that channel goes away for the third time. So I'm just trying to make it happen. I'm not doing anything different. I just assumed by now they would have censored the removed these or gotten rid of them or tried to block the channel. My hope is that that does happen because I want to get this channel being there, 100,000 subscribers or not, is why people have not yet moved away. And yes, people could argue it's because I keep streaming on it, but I haven't been, to be honest. I was streaming on 30 other channels for the past however many months, especially while it was censored, and yet still people thought that it was there, stayed on YouTube and so on. So I'm going to continue to do this, and if it doesn't end up knocking the channel off like I'm expecting it to, because today especially is very important, I'll end up going back. I'm going to, no matter what, go back to doing the multiple streams from different channels, because I find it a very powerful way to circumvent their control of the content. They still control it, but if they don't know where you're going to be entering in their platform at what time and what day and what channel, it's a little more difficult for them to throttle and control what you're doing. That's what I'm going to keep doing going forward forever. Unless they just find a way to stop me from doing it in general. But just wanted to note, I haven't given up on that. It's important to me that we very clearly drive people away from YouTube, but some, especially with the 100,000 subscribers and the reach this does get within the lost arena that is the YouTube watchers, it's important for things like this to get out on there. So sorry if that was long-winded. It was important for me for people to understand why I continue to use it now. It's important to me that people go to SuperU, that we go to other places instead of YouTube, because that's the control structure. Now, we're going to get into a lot of very powerful stuff today, as I said. The spike protein, the shedding, the vaccine discussion, the interesting discovery of a study or the information around the Pfizer vaccine and showing you that it is, in fact, already a self-amplifying self. There's a different word they're using, and I'm going to go over it today. I'm surprised I just blanked on it, in fact, but there's already evidence to show that this is what Pfizer is today, despite the fact that that's not what's being stated. And I find that to be very alarming. Now, we're going to go over what those things mean and a lot more today. So please stay tuned to the end, and I will do my best to make this as concise as possible. For those that love how we continue to call the show concise doesn't mean short, just so everyone's aware. Concise means a lot of information in a short period of time. And as we go over multiple days in one show, I would say 3 hours for four days is pretty damn concise. But, you know, for the ones that like short because they're Twitter and Instagram people, well, I'm sorry, it's not what we do here. But hopefully you'll get the time to see it, because there's a lot of powerful stuff that we're going to go over. Now, oops, starting here, those are the things that I was going to look at for later shows. I want to make an interesting point. I have a bad habit of starting in the middle there. This is a really, really powerful thing that we've been discussing for a long time that was fake news. And it's still fake news according to the mainstream media, that I want to make a point with before we get into right out of the gate in regard to the infertility discussion around COVID-19 injections and the science and the studies and the data that shows you that that's a very, very real thing. If at the very least, that you have every reason to be concerned that that's happening right now, based on their information. But before we get to that, Dr. James Lyons Weiler, PhD, shared this on Twitter the other day. And I wanted to reiterate this because we've been covering this concept for a long time on The Last American Vagabond, specifically glyphosate, and how wildly dangerous it is and how wildly prolific and just it's everywhere. It's in the clothes you're wearing. It's in the air you're breathing. It's in the food you're eating. It's everywhere. It's in the water. I've said this before. They did a piss test of every person in the European Parliament. Every single one of them had glyphosate in their urine. They tested all the organic wines in Napa Valley. Every single one of them had glyphosate, even though they go out of their way to try to not make that happen. This is everywhere, and it's dangerous, and it's causing cancer and all sorts of other things. The point was, people were concerned that glyphosate was killing the bee population. Plenty of science came out to say that's actually what's happening. And they said, no, fake news, because obviously Monsanto's on our side, media side, mainstream media side. So here's October 13, 2015. Glyphosate and astamiprid have relatively low toxicity for honeybees, right? This is just the general kind of peripheral mainstream article outlets just kind of going, parrot what mainstream says, parrot what government told me to say. It's totally low toxicity because the regulators who are bought off told us so, right? Here's another one. April 17, 2018. The bee apocalypse was never real. Here's why. Going into all the, that's just not real and you don't know what you're talking about. Here's a viewpoint. Glyphosate harms bees. Anti-biotech campaigners attempt to revive debunked myth, blaming world's most used herbicide. Like, think of how much has even changed since 2019 and what happened, you know, the merger with Monsanto and Bayer and what, you know, the reality of what Monsanto is. It's so embarrassing to act like this is some debunked myth. But guess what? Let's go to the science, right? Because these are the same people today going, trust the science, while they ignore scientific research. Now, when I say the science, I'm doing that in a mocking way. I hope you guys all know that. Because the science is a stupid term. There's not something that's just the science, right? This implies that it doesn't change and that it's accepted and it does. And going forward, there's only this we look at. And I mean, this speaks to something I was going to get into way at the end, but I just want to show you this might as well, since I'm talking about it, I'll come back to this. Denny Rancourt pointed this out. It's on Off Guardian. It's hilarious. I'm going to read all of these later, but one of these says, and this is basically what they're telling you what these terms mean in the real world today. The science actually means a subset of scientific knowledge which cannot be challenged on the basis of empirical data or repeatable experiment because it has been, quote, settled by the consensus between the subset of experts, in quotes, who adhere to it. Right? Like, it's so funny. That's exactly what it is. People are showing you new science and new research, and they're going, well, no, that doesn't count because we've already told you what, quote, the science says. It's really that stupid. But here is a study, PubMed, May 2021. Very important. Melanin, a black-grown pigment found throughout all kingdoms of life, has diverse biological functions, particularly in insect immune diseases. Glyphosate, the most widely used herbicide globally, even today, by the way, despite it being very clearly dangerous, and even though it's banned in plenty of countries, it's still the most. Why? because it was pushed by people that are powerful around Monsanto, Monsanto itself included, and people like the Gates of the world, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundations. This is the stuff that they were championing under the idea of GMOs and everything else. Trust me, all of this fits together. Maybe not necessarily in today's show, but the idea that this, the genetically modified organisms, the vaccine push in India and these different things, this is all a big massive push towards where we are right now. Now, glyphosate, the most widely used herbicide globally, inhibits melanin production. So remember, this is what particularly helps insects in their immune defenses. It says, which could have wide-ranging implications in the health of many organisms, including insects. Here, we demonstrate that glyphosate has damaging effects on insects, insect health in two evolutionary distinct species. Basically moths and mosquitoes, a specific type. But what they're saying is this suggests a broad effect in all insects. Glyphosate reduced survival. Glyphosate also increased the burden of the malaria-causing parasite, Latin name, in mosquitoes in a specific genus. It says it altered uninfected mosquito survival. So understand what that's saying. This is really interesting, especially what we're going to get into today in like the self-amplifying, self-spreading discussions in general. What it's telling you there is that glyphosate increased the burden of this parasite, which hurt mosquitoes, but then it also altered the unaffected mosquitoes' survival around that. Think about how interesting that is in parallel to what we're talking about. And it says, and perturbed the microbial composition of adult mosquito mud guts, which is just a part of their body. I've looked it up. It says our results show, let me make sure I didn't, that's, is that what it was? I've looked up a couple things. Yeah. The middle part of the canal, including the small intestine. So part of their body, our results show that glyphosate's mechanism of melanin inhibition involves antioxidant synergy and disruption of the reaction oxidation reduction balance. Which sounds pretty bad to me. Overall, these findings suggest that glyphosate's environmental accumulation, which is what I always talk about, could render insects more susceptible to microbial pathogens due to exactly what they know glyphosate causes, the melanin inhibition, immune impairment, and perturbations in the microbial discussion we talked about, which makes them more likely to get sick and then everyone else around them, potentially contributing to declines in insects' populations. And this is specifically in regard to the bee discussion. In far as I'm discussing it. Now, think about how important that is. And the fact of what they're telling you, the glyphosate builds up in your body. And this, so when they say that, oh, what you just drank, that's below the level of being dangerous. Well, how about the fact if you drink every day for your life, which we all do, or you eat the same thing every day for your, you know, whatever. The point is it builds up in your body and becomes dangerous. It's dangerous anyway. We're being deceived about this. But recognize that your government, the regulatory agencies, everybody, even as this comes out, do not care. Are they trusting the science, as they say, or are they ignoring things in interest of agendas and corporate interests and God knows what else? Let's see how long it takes for them to stop selling glyphosate under the argument that it's killing the bee population or just insects in general that are important to other ecosystems. It'll never happen. Right. So recognize this. And as we go into the other discussion and recognize how clearly that they don't care about the problems. And when the science says that they have a problem, they just lean into things that they have already agreed upon. That's the science image I showed you from Denny Rancourt. Oh, and what's interesting, by the way, is that they're over here going fake news, fake news. Just look at how there's so many studies about this stuff that just get ignored. I don't want to get lost on that, but recognize what that shows you about the same people we're dealing with in this talk, in this conversation. Now, this is where I first saw this actually this morning. What's funny is there's some synergy here today. Dr. Akhan Saeed shared this tweet. Holy crap. And this was actually yesterday. He shared it. I saw it this morning. This leaked Pfizer study from the EMA shows that the vaccine particles are hugely sequestered into the ovaries and a couple other places as well. Now, he shows just this one page with this one part highlighted. Now, what's interesting, the synergy I'm talking about, is that Whitney Webb reached out this morning after this and told me that Dr. Peter McCullough, who I just played on our show, where he cites Whitney Webb as some great, being a great researcher and this great thing she found out in the beginning of all this that nobody was talking about. We just played that. In fact, it's right here. In fact, I don't think I'm going to play it today, But here is Dr. Peter McCullough. Something is very wrong. And he calls out Whitney Webb here and says, great job. Or not calls out, but shouts out Whitney Webb. What's interesting is that he reached out to Whitney and said, check this out. Not only do I have the study itself, which we'll show you, not just the screenshot that's going around the internet today, so we can actually prove to you that it is what it says, but he was blown away by this, as well as a couple of other things. Now, funny enough, the two other things that he sent, we've already shown you on the show. I'll go over them again today. It just, one, speaks to how far immersed we are in this and how far ahead we are typically of pretty much everybody out there. And that's not my opinion, guys. Just look at the track record. But the fact that he is very concerned about this and what this shows you, not just this screenshot, we'll get into it all, that shows you that there is an obvious accumulation over a very short period of time of the problematic issues. We're going to talk about this in regard to the spike protein, in regard to how this works. It's building up in the ovaries and primarily in the uterus. Even in the testes to a degree for men, but not even close to as much. So let's look at this. I'm glad I put that there. So what's interesting is, so what this ultimately is, it says the overview of a pharmacokinetic test. So this is something that has gotten, this is legitimate, but it's being shown essentially now, right now, before it was supposed to be like officially shown to everybody. What that means is the pharmacokinetics is the study of how an organism affects a drug, which is interesting. Whereas pharmacodynamics is the study of how a drug affects the organism. So you would think that it would be the other way around, right? Why would they be concerned about how our bodies will affect the drug? Maybe it's because it's a way to find out whether the body breaks things down. I don't know. Maybe this, I'm not well-versed on this to know whether this is a normal thing or not. But regardless, it shows you that they're trying to dig into this to find out how these things interact. That's the important part. Now, here is the beginning page of this same study. Ugh, dang it. Here's the page itself. Just so you can see, I'm not going to scroll on it. As I usually do, I have it right here. So this is the page of what he first shows on his screenshot. Now, I wanted to point this out because I found it to be interesting, but it's also interesting because I want to explain something that I think is being confused, not necessarily, not even at all by Dr. Peter McCullough, but just by other people in general. And this was something that came up early on. But this is still interesting to me because this has been dismissed as something that's not even involved in this process. Now it says, because in vivo, in your in-body expression distribution of the antigen encoded by the biotech Pfizer injection is considered to depend on the lipid nanoparticle distribution, which the lipid nanoparticle part of this in and of itself is a problem. But it says the BLAB/C mice, who are the ones being studied in this process, are intramuscularly administered luciferase RNA, encapsulated LNP, lipid nanoparticle, and alternatively reported protein. Now, remember what this is. Now, the luciferase is about the luminescence, the idea of being able to track this stuff through the body, as I understand it. So what's interesting to me is that this is still being discussed in the process of these injections, even whether it's trials or not. And yet they act like this is such a crazy thing that we should dismiss as fake news. I just find that telling, but also that I wonder whether or not this is being used in trials on people. Just an honest question, because I don't know. But it says in vivo distribution, by the way, we saw this in the Moderna documentation way back in regard to those trials, remember? And that was people. So that's why I'm asking that question. Now it says in vivo distribution was examined. As a result, expression of luciferase is found at the site of administration. Now, the point of this, the main point of reading this. Oh, that's what happened. Hold on. Go back. There we go. Oops. Not sure how that got skewed, but here is the page itself from the study itself, which you can read and check and look into for yourself. Now, what's the important part is, again, you can see what he's got highlighted, him as well, but here all the way across. Now, it's important to get the full picture. Here's the point. First of all, it says total lipid concentration, males and females. Okay. Now, what it's saying here, obviously, this is combined, but when it gets to things like ovaries and stuff, that's not combined. Now, what it's saying here is that the lipid concentration, remember, which is encapsulating the mRNA instructions to build out the spike protein, right? So this is how this can end up finding its way into other parts of your body. As, by the way, I'm going to go over more of this today. We've shown unequivocally, as even Dr. Hodgkinson and different people have pointed out, these things do not just stay in the site of injection, which is, it's obvious, and multiple scientific studies show this, that it ends up going into your blood, that it ends up going into your body, which then causes all the same problems, because I'll reiterate again today, because the spike protein alone, as all the different studies on this topic have shown, can cause all these problems. So I don't, and even one, as I showed you in the past, one of the studies that says this should call into question whether these vaccines are safe. No one cares. So the lipid nanoparticles with the problem are being put into your bodies. Now, after 25 minutes or 0.25 of an hour, into 1 hour, 2 hour, 4 hours, and so on, as you can see the hours up top right here. Okay, and then you can see on ovaries, it shows you the concentration. Now, take note of everything else around it. After 1 hour, you get to 1.34, 1.64 after 2, 2.34 after 4 hours, and all the way up to 12.3 after 48 hours. You notice the numbers around everything else? 0.1, 0.5, 0.6, 0.1, 0.2. You're talking 12.3, more than any other location in the body. So let's just pretend for a second that these things aren't dangerous, even though all the data and all the different studies that have been shown are very clearly suggesting that both the lipid nanoparticles themselves and the spike protein itself can be very damaging. In fact, are the problem. But that aside, is it not interesting that these things are, I mean, what is that? That's what, 24 times over the most the other ones? And it's all in your ovaries? And then even coming down here to the uterus. Well, that was actually, maybe there was another one that I was looking at. In any case, the ovaries are the important part. Was it the testes? There was another one that I was looking at in here that had the higher, ultimately the point is that all of these are pretty damn low. I mean, the thyroid is at one. That's interesting as well on top of it. But 48 hours later, it is exponentially more concentrated in your ovaries and your reproductive locations. Now, also what he points out is the percentage of administered dose. Now, this correlates with the time over here. So I want people to recognize that. Okay, so they're at point that the percentage of the administered dose, right? So it's at the lowest part of it up to the highest part of it after 48 hours, obviously. So recognize that it gets higher than almost everything else right out in 1 hour. It goes up to 1.34. Look at the other numbers. The spleen at this point is really high. Oh, there's the other part of it. The spleen. That's what I was looking for. 23. So the second highest in regard to your ovaries. Now, the spleen is one of the other places we've already talked about in regard to a lot of these issues we've been seeing. But I'm not going to get into that today. But the point is the concentration, spleen or ovaries. After 1 hour, 0.009% of the administered dose. Think about how crazy that is. Now, anyway, I'm not going to belabor the point. The data from their own documentation shows you quite clearly that it's building up in the ovaries and the reproductive areas. Okay, so that's alarming. Now let's get into why the spike protein and these things being there are alarming. Why? I don't know why these things keep failing on me. This one, gosh darn it, I had it all lined up. Of course, this is probably why this is happening, is one I've already shown you. I'll find it. Don't worry. I think I have to search for reproductivity. And there we go. Screw you, manipulators. Okay, so reproduction toxicity. Now, I've shown you this before. This is from the Europa.eu. This is from the European side of this discussion. And it's talking about a study they did with mice that shows you an obvious issue. Now, this is one that happened before all of this. I forget what the date was, 2021. It's important. I just want to see if it correlates with all the way up. Okay. March 11th. Okay. So March 11th, 2021. So think about how long this has been out, right? It's not like it was yesterday. Months have gone by and no one wants to talk about what this means. If you saw this, you remember, and this is crazy. What it says, a GPL compliant reproductive and developmental toxicity study. DART. Also ask yourself why a toxicity study in regard to reproductivity was being done on March 11, 2021, while it was being injected in pregnant women, while it was being injected in all sorts of people. who cares, right? Because it's totally safe and effective, and we did all the studies right as we continue to study the things that we're concerned about. Because those totally make sense together, right? No, they're literally diametric opposites. Mutually exclusive, you cannot put those two things together. But it says this study in regard to reproductivity and development with the mRNA-1273, the Moderna vaccine, has been conducted in females, rats. Now it says, IM administrations of the mRNA of the Moderna vaccine to female rats at the human clinical dose twice before mating and twice during gestation was associated with non-adverse effects, including, and this is what's funny, is that this is the first part, not even the dangerous part, but thin fur cover, swollen hind legs, limited usage of the hind limb. And they talk about this like, nah, no big deal, not even worth talking about. That sounds crazy to me. That sounds like plenty enough to worry about. But it says, however, there was no mRNA Moderna-related effects on female fertility. This is what they state before they say the next thing. No issue. No related effects. And you'll see why they say that. Now, it says the Moderna-related non-adverse effects were limited to an increase in the number of it's weird. I looked at this last time. Foetuses is apparently the plural of fetuses. Foetuses is something strange. That doesn't make sense to me, but fetuses, I guess we'll say, because I don't like saying that word. With common, it says it increased the number of fetuses with common skeletal variations, with one or more rib nodules or one or more wavy ribs with no effect on the viability and growth. So fine, they were able to grow up and exist, but you're literally talking about just deformed skeletal growth. And that's no big deal. Who cares? They had thin fur, swollen hind limbs, limited usage of their legs. And, you know, they had one less rib when they were born, but no big deal there. Not at all. That doesn't mean that's going to affect you guys. This is exactly why they do these studies. And it's ridiculous they would claim this. But here's the actual point. And if you remember, this is crazy. In this study, it says no vaccine dose was administered during the early organogenesis to address the direct embryo toxic effects of the components of the vaccine formulation. Okay. So early on, they're saying, well, we didn't do that part of it because we didn't address these parts that are, they're discussing direct embryo toxic effects they didn't deal with. However, such a risk is considered low in humans, right? So this is what they keep doing. Well, because vaccines have been shown to be safe for so long, we're not worried. Well, that doesn't apply. How about the fact that, well, since this doesn't have a viral component, we don't worry about pregnant women. Again, that doesn't apply because we're not even talking about the same technology. But this is what they keep doing. Are you concerned about the direct embryo toxic effects that they just disregarded? Because, well, we already know they're low in humans. I sure am. Still, not even the most important part. Given the that was the point. They say it right there. Given the non-live organism nature. So we're going to disregard this very clear issue that we've acknowledged exists just because we've assumed that non-live organisms don't mean this won't be a risk, but that's being clearly shown not to be the case. And the show today will make that clear as well. And the low risk genotoxic effect of the lipid nanoparticles in humans. Yeah, exactly. Exactly what we're concerned about and exactly what we're seeing cause a problem, but lesser than the spike protein. The overall pregnancy index, this is the important part, was numerically lower in the mRNA, in the Moderna vaccinated female rats. What? So we didn't have any issues, but the women that took these injections had a lower pregnancy index compared to the control animals. Look at this, 84% with the injection, 93% with nothing. You're telling me that an almost 10% decrease in fertility is not noticeable? That's not, if anything is statistically relevant, 10% decrease is very clearly statistically significant. But it says, but, and this is the point, it remains within the test facility's historical control range. Good God. So as long as you don't drop below 70% possibility to reproduce, then we don't care. Think about how disgusting that is. Who sets that test facility's historical control range? People making the tests. Oh, who's doing that? Oh, you mean the people that have a profit motive? Weird. I sure care about a 10% reduction in fertility or the fact that we have weird skeletal growth or a genotoxic effect on embryos that we're disregarding because of something that doesn't make sense. On and on and on. This has been here for months. Nobody cares other than you. Here's a new study because, of course, it's all safe and effective and we know it's okay for pregnant women. But while we study that, we'll pretend we think that. Right now, February 10th, 2021, they're currently recruiting. Last updated March 26th, COVID-19 vaccine and ovarian reserve. Well, what do you know? It's safe and effective, though, right? You're telling pregnant women they can do it, right? Well, what are we studying? Fertility issues. Perfect. So we don't know if that's the case because we haven't finished the research, but we'll keep pretending like we know that's not the case because we've finished it. I mean, there's no way to finish that. They are lying to you, or they're lying, or they're stating what they think is the truth because they're dumb and they're too stupid to do their own research. Fertility research about whether it hurts you is being done. There's no way you can know the outcome of that before it's done. This kindergarten stuff, guys. The effect of COVID-19 mRNA vaccine on ovarian reserve. Ongoing. Here, by the way, on that note, are a couple of things from the current FDA document about these injections. See, May 19th. Okay, it says, all pregnancies under the pregnancy 11.1 section, all pregnancies have a risk of birth defect, loss, and other adverse outcomes, period. Okay, now why would they start with that? This is something that's being directed. This one was specifically for, I believe this was the ones for the caretakers, people doing it, providers. Okay, so this is specifically for the people administering the injection, right? So one, do you think they're not aware that pregnancies have birth defects? But this isn't meant for mass adoption. This is meant for the average guy in the corner. This is meant for doctors, nurses, people administering it. So ask yourself why they feel the need to interject an opinion, or at the very least, a statement of what they feel is important. Like, so the reason they're stating this is because they want to counterbalance this to say all pregnancies have risks and losses and stuff. So that doesn't mean all these things are pregnancy related. Clearly, that's why that sentence is there. They're already trying to get ahead of what's happening in the statement they're giving to people giving the injection. I mean, I know I may be digging too much into that one sentence, but realize why that is an unnecessary statement. This is about risk summary. So go in and tell us about the risks. You don't need to counterbalance that with why that risk is not as serious because other things happen other places. That's just crazy. That is propaganda. So going forward, it says available data on Pfizer BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine administered to pregnant women are insufficient to inform vaccine associated risks in pregnancy. That's as of May 19, 2021. Really drink that in. Insufficient to inform risks about pregnancy. So why then is it being okayed for pregnant women? Why then is it being given to pregnant women? Why then are doctors allowing it to be given to pregnant women? Anybody know? Because they're either not reading this or they don't care. Which one is a crime and one is catastrophically serious negligence or even malfeasance. Who cares though, right? May 19th. But we're all crazy fake news because we read the actual inserts and point to scientific studies. Down here it says, under lactation, well, data, again, are not available to assess the effects of this injection on breastfed infants or on milk production excretion. But it's happening anyway. People are taking this thing and then maybe a month later, getting pregnant. What if they had a baby 2 months before they got the injection and now they're still breastfeeding? Nobody cares. This is right there. It's right in front of us, and it's obvious, and they know it. Pfizer knows it. The FDA knows it. Nobody's doing anything. How do you not see that for what it is? How do you not realize that that means there's a conscious choice to ignore crimes, to ignore violations of something very serious, of safety, while they scream it's for your safety? Here's the other document. Now, this would be the one for people taking it, right? So this is what you would see if you weren't smart enough to go out there and find the other document or watch this show and look it up for yourself. They hope you don't see that. That's meant to be for the nurses, right? This says, what if I'm pregnant or breastfeeding? Well, guess what? Instead of saying, we don't have the studies or science to tell you that, you maybe shouldn't do it. They just go, discuss it with your healthcare provider. Oh, you mean the people that also don't know that it's a problem? The people that also don't know that this document very clearly says that that shouldn't happen and there's no studies? Yeah, because they don't know, because the media and the government aren't telling them, because the CDC and the FDA that they blindly trust are not telling them. That's the reality. So they just go talk to your doctor. Your doctor says, yeah, get it, because we're all in danger. And here you go. Over and over and over. And we're the ones that are breaking the law. Well, let's bring this over into the shedding discussion, because this is a very real thing that this expert wanted you to know about. Now, I differ with part of his opinion. I disagree. I could be wrong. He could be right. It could go either way. Or I guess it would be, I could be wrong, I'd be right. But the point is, I'm going to go after this with the science, all of the information, all the different studies, all the different things, and show you that it's very clearly backed up, that this can be dangerous, that it can hurt you. But here's what he actually said. No, this is Andy Swan pointing out his favorite thing today is thinking about how Twitter suspended, I would say, the discoverer, one of the, you know, the inventor of mRNA. I mean, I know that's how the government frames this stuff today, as some kind of discovery. Like, you patent a new virus, you invented it. Like, that's how they're framing. That's that clip I used to always play about all the patents for human life, you know. But nonetheless, I just don't know how you would say the creator or the discoverer of mRNA. In any case, Twitter suspended one of the discoverers of mRNA technology for saying that vaccinated persons could shed the spike protein. An expert, Luigi Warren, currently undergoing another bogus lockout for posting absolutely correct statements on Twitter. Here's what he said. I believe the shedding idea is that the vaccinated shed spike protein, not virus. Well, look at that. I believe the shedding idea is that the vaccinated shed spike protein, not virus. Then he goes on to say, and it's certainly true that people vaccinated with mRNA vaccines do shed spike protein. But, he says, in minuscule amounts that almost certainly can't cause disease. And he could be right. The problem is that he said something you're not supposed to say, which is obviously being backed up by numerous scientific studies that people are shedding spike proteins. Now, when you consider the fact that he's saying that this is happening, but it's in small enough amounts that it's not a problem, that in and of itself, coming from this expert, implies that it can do it, though. Right? That if it was just enough, which we'll go on to show you is clearly happening, it would spread. So it's capable of spreading to other people after leaving your body. According to this expert, according to one of the creators, discoverers, inventors of mRNA that's being used by these same people. That's incredible and backs up what we're saying. Now, going off of that point, first, talking about the shedding, right? The idea that that's possible. I wrote about this, or I did a video about this, and before this, in fact, also, but on May 2nd, self-spreading vaccines, which are a very real thing that Johns Hopkins is discussing for the future, human-to-human self-spreading vaccines, by the way, then they're already being used on animals. They've been worked on for decades. I've talked about this. You can see it in this show. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's very open science that they're working on, and Johns Hopkins is now the one trying to pivot that into human-to-human transmission. That's what it would be, of vaccination. Which is alarming. Say goodbye to informed consent that already doesn't exist. But then I talk about self-amplifying mRNA vaccines, which is an important discussion today, which we'll have next, and why that's actually already happening, not just in that study I showed you, but in real time, and COVID vaccine menstrual disruptions, which ties in with the first discussion we just had, the obvious issues that are being caused. Now, I hope you'll go back and watch this again. It's a very important one. Oh, look, shocker, YouTube deleted it. I wonder why. Even though they left the whole channel up, and gave me like 13 strikes in a row, which should delete like four channels, but they just left it up. Something strange is going on with them, and I don't know why, but take note that they censored this one. Now, why would that be? Every single thing in here is completely cited and sourced to the things we're going to talk about today, but they censored it, probably because they don't want you knowing this stuff, or somebody told them to, and they just do what they're told. But going forward, gosh darn it, that's driving me crazy. I'm going to keep losing after. I'm glad I'm remembering this stuff right now, because here we go. I would have drove me crazy. I wouldn't know where to find this stuff. Okay, so this is one of the first things we'll talk about. And this is in regard to the possibility of things shedding. Not necessarily that it's dangerous. That's the next part we'll get to, but that it can shed, or at least that the multiple points suggest that that is the case. And then we've got this expert now saying it as a matter of fact. And of course, censored by Twitter, which is really embarrassing them, seeing as how he's the last person they would censor if he was saying what they wanted. But it shows you that they're in control of the flow of information. But now, this is an important thing to point out that I've already shown you. And I do have a counterpoint to it as well in regard to whether this might not mean what we think it does, but it's important to point this out. Under the Pfizer documentation for the trials of 1, 2, and 3 that were jammed together, it says exposure during pregnancy. And as we pointed out before, it very clearly says, and this is what counts as an EDP, an exposure during pregnancy. If a female is found to be pregnant while having been exposed to study intervention due to environmental exposure. Now, what would that be? Sounds like exactly what we're talking about. Below are examples of that kind of exposure. It says a female family member or healthcare provider reports that she is pregnant after having been exposed to the study intervention, the injection, by inhalation, or skin contact. Now, taking this at face value, as if this only applies to the Pfizer, and each time they do these things, they're specific to what they're testing, which is certainly possible. Inhalation is alarming, especially under the context of things we're talking about, whether that's shedding or something like a smart dust discussion, right? I mean, these are very real things that we could talked about that are very real and already in, you know, being used. Whether or not they're in this or being talked about around this topic, well, that's for you to decide. It's certainly possible. And this exact government has done these kind of things more than once and admitted to it. Now, a male family member or healthcare provider who has been exposed to the study intervention by, again, inhalation or skin contact, and then exposes his female partner prior to or around the time of conception. So this means somebody who is not taking the injection was around somebody who did, who could then get it by skin contact or inhalation, and then expose the pregnant person. So that's two people passing on. So it just shows you this is a very interesting discussion. Now, this is what I brought up last time, and this Dr. Peter Maloney points this out as well. And I'm not saying this is the case, but it's something that is a valid point to make sure we're being objective about this. He says, and this is one of the frontline doctors pointing the same thing out, highlighting what we just discussed, comparing it to the mainstream going, go get the injection. Like, even regardless of whether this is even here, for the mainstream media to say, go get this injection, literally while they don't have enough evidence to support that it can even be safe, is a crime. That's what medical misinformation looks like. Just understand that. They don't care, though. But as he says, are these not mere adverse reaction protocols outlining a range of what-if scenarios? Are you suggesting these reporting protocols are based on known effects? And he lists the supporting protocol discussion. Now, you can look at it for yourself. I don't necessarily see any obvious examples of why they would include that every time, but it's a valid question to ask. Now, that being stated, it's clear that this is at least a red flag. So going forward, here's what the frontline doctors themselves, America's frontline doctors, has to say in regard to all this. There's a lot of good information in here. Number three, and remember, despite the propaganda and the attacks on this group, these are all doctors with degrees, experts, PhDs, valid people that have a right to speak on this stuff. It says the vaccine produces many trillions of particles of spike proteins in the recipient. Now, before you freak out at that, for people that, you know, would argue that's not true or impossible or whatever, there's something we're going to get to in a moment in the show that at the very least makes that a fair argument. So just understand that, because the whole idea is that, no, it does it one time. And then, but every doctor we've spoken to, from Vakti to Yeadon to Hodkinson, and all of these people have said very clearly that there's no evidence at all that it does that. In fact, that it seems to continue to do it, which again leads into the self-amplifying discussion, which we'll get to. But just realize that at first I saw that and was like, really? But based on my research, that seems to be a fair statement. Trillions of particles of spike proteins, or more specifically, the lipid nanoparticles with the instructions to do so. Now, it says patients who are vaccinated can shed some of these spike protein particles to close contacts. The particles have the ability to create inflammation and disease in the contacts. In other words, the spike proteins are pathogenic, disease-causing, just like the full virus. Now, I'm not sure that this is what they're stating, which I find very telling. And certainly possible, but I'm still on the fence about whether that's, at least my research has shown. Because what I'm trying to argue today is not necessarily that this is becoming COVID-19 or anything else. I'm simply arguing that the spike protein by itself, shedded, not even viral content, just the spike protein, I guess what you would call it that anyway, but some, not like a virus, but by itself, if shedding, like the doctor's talking about, or like the expert talked about, and if at high enough volume or rate or whatever you would call it, as he's saying, if it were, it would be dangerous, that itself can find its way into your body, as he suggests, and that leads to all these problems that then gets misdiagnosed as something else. But these are doctors that have a right to speak on it, and they're experts, so take their opinion for what it is. Now, it says what is most worrisome is that a person's body is being suddenly flooded with 13 trillion, I'm not sure where that number comes from, of these particles, and the spike protein bind more tightly than the fully intact virus. Because of the biomimicry, that's important because we'll talk about that next, and this is what we're discussing in regard to the spike protein, what they're calling COVID-19 mimicry, which, shocking, you know what's going to happen in today's world, it gets called COVID-19. But so going forward, it says, because of the biomimicry similarity on the spike, shedding appears to be causing wide variety of autoimmune diseases. Again, where the body attacks its own tissue in some people. Worldwide cases of pericarditis, shingles, pneumonia, blood clots, and the extremities and brain, Bell's palsy, vaginal bleeding, miscarriages have been reported in persons who are near people who have been injected. We've already talked about this. There's even the sad example that was, I think, later deleted from Veyers with a woman who was breastfeeding her baby. And after she was injected and the baby died days later from some strange thing that was connected to something that we would now trace back to the very clear side effects that are being fleshed out right now. You know, all the thrombocytopenia stuff, it's all very clearly tied together. That's why you see a 27-year-old Olympian die from a heart attack and they go, no connection to the injection he just took. It's like, okay, give me a second here. There's so many things happening. They're tying back to the idea of blood clots and strokes and heart attacks, and we just dismiss it? Of course they do. But it says going forward, in addition, they know the spike proteins can cross the blood-brain barrier, unlike traditional vaccines, which, by the way, that last statement, I'm not even necessarily agree with. Remember that people like Dr. Pilevsky have argued that's not the case, that they do, in fact, enter the brain. Right. But so this is, again, you know, traditional assumptions. But see, even people like this tend to lean into things they've taken for granted or assume that maybe they're right. But that's my point about other people that speak about things that we agree with, but then they'll state something that we think is wrong. It doesn't necessarily mean they're lying all the time. They just are. They're working their way out of, like, think about it like this. Even though they're experts in their fields, when it comes to the manipulations, the sinister, nefarious deceptions of the world in regard to politics or anything else, you are light years ahead of them. They're just now putting their toe into the conspiracy theory world and realizing, wow, this is all, there's not a lot. We're being called fake news now as we know we're right. You know, so it just takes them a long time to open their eyes to it. But crossing the blood-brain barrier is another thing we'll talk about in a second, which is very obvious. But then it says, what about interaction between unvaccinated children and vaccinated adults or even vaccinated children? They're concerned that some children will become COVID symptomatic after their parents and teachers get injected. This concern does not relate to risk from infection, which is interesting. And indeed, according to the American Academy of Pediatrics and the Children's Hospital Association, approximately 1.6% of children with a known cause of COVID-19 have been hospitalized and 0.01% have died. Now, again, this is all based on things that we know have at least the possibility, a high possibility of false positives. So take that for what you will. But even with that false positive aspect, even with the combination of flu and pneumonia with COVID-19, which they don't even hide, that's still how low it is. And they're still trying to force these kids to be injected. It says, rather, public health bureaucrats might use these cases of breakthrough transmission, you know, showing whether it's cases afterward or just what the injection's causing in them afterward, or symptoms to speculate that a child's illness is related to SARS-CoV-2 variants. Exactly. When in reality, it's the reaction to the injection. Our other concern is that children could develop long-term chronic autoimmune disease, including neurological problems, due to the fact that children have decades ahead of them and trillions of spike proteins mentioned above. It's interesting. Now, I know there's plenty of people that maybe even agree with most of what we're talking about that might argue America's frontline doctors are, you know, someone you shouldn't be trusting, which I wholeheartedly disagree with. That being stated, as usual, let's look at the science. The science. Somebody's asking in the chat, how would I get censored for speaking truth? You're a little behind, TruthFlix. I've been censored 1,000 times. Anyway, I just find that hilarious. I'm going to censor it on LinkedIn, DLive, Brayon, Twitter, Spotify, GoDaddy, on and on and on. I mean, I wanted to make a list the other day. So many places. Anyway, this is infection of human sweat glands by SARS-CoV-2, November 13, 2020. Now, why this is important is because it's showing you that the spike protein In this, the context of SARS-CoV-2 finds its way into your sweat glands. But look at what it says. To determine the possible relationship between cellular receptors and co-receptors and the cell tropism of SARS-CoV-2, we analyzed the distribution of ACE2 and the TMPRSS2 in relation to viral spike proteins in various sweat glands and sweat duct cells. In the sweat gland itself, they found that the ACE2 and TMPRSS2 were abundantly expressed in the luminal secretory, like secretion cells, and viral spike protein distribution corresponded with that, right? The distribution, not just the presence of the SARS-CoV-2 or the COVID-19 disease, but no, the distribution of the spike proteins were found to be heavily, abundantly expressed in the sweat glands alone. Then it goes on to say, as with SARS-CoV, the targeting of sweat glands by the SARS-CoV-2 may lead to viral shedding via perspiration. So, of course, people want to make this only about SARS-CoV-2 and ignore the risk of the spike protein and how this relates in the same way, because that doesn't fit the narrative. But the reality is, as other doctors and scientists have already pointed out on T-Lab and elsewhere, this is obviously happening. And what this is telling you is the spike protein that builds up in your sweat glands or is abundantly expressed in that location can then shed from your body via perspiration or other style or other ways that was listed in other studies, all sorts of different things. Actually, I think it was in this one in particular, talking about feces and all sorts of other things. The spike protein alone. Now, with this, again, with this expert telling you that he believes that this is absolutely happening and certainly true, that vaccinated people with these vaccines are shedding this spike protein, recognize how real this is. Now, here is the other one in regard to the risks, or a lot of them, in fact, as we go through the rest of them. Now, this is one we've shown you before from not long ago, January 11th, 2021. SARS-CoV-2 spike protein elicits cell signaling in human cell host cells. Okay, spike protein alone. Okay, so now you've got over here a body with abundantly expressed spike proteins built up in the sweat glands, or elsewhere, for that matter, as plenty have pointed out. So what they're telling you here is that, based on their research, that thing alone in your body can elicit cell signals to cause problems in your body. Implications for possible consequences of the vaccines themselves. Didn't see that on the news, did you? I guess they're not trusting the science. It says vaccines that introduce the spike protein into our body to elicit virus-neutralizing antibodies are currently being developed. Remember, this was in January. In this article, they note that human host cells sensitively respond to the spike protein to elicit cell signaling. Thus, it is important to be aware that the spike protein produced by the new COVID-19 injections may also affect the host cells. We should monitor the long-term consequences of these injections carefully. And by that, they mean not inject it wildly into everybody as fast as possible. The opposite, in fact. But we don't care about what science says. We care about what they tell us the science says, apparently, especially when they are administered to otherwise healthy individuals. Right. Exactly. Very clear. Here's another. We've shown you this one too. We're going to show you the couple that I've shown you first, then we're going to get into the new stuff that you haven't seen yet. This is also from April 28th, 2021. COVID-19 alters human genes. Oh man, that sounds really bad to COVID-19, except when you realize that, wait a minute, we found that exposure to SARS-CoV-2 spike protein alone was enough to change baseline gene expression in the airway cells. So you know what that means? Those COVID-19 injections alter human genes. They alter your genes. They design it that way. Don't really care, to be honest. I mean, I do, but in the context of the conversation, I don't. This is showing you that the spike protein alone was enough to change the baseline gene expression in airway cells. So that means that this is what's changing human genes. They're trying to say, well, that explains long haulers. Well, no, what explains long haulers is the constant use of a spike protein producing injection that's then creating the same thing for people forever. And that's COVID long haul forever. They're clearly telling you the spike protein alone causes these things. No one cares. Here's the newer one that I've recently talked about. And this is a preprint. Vaccine-induced COVID-19 mimicry. Splice reactions within the SARS-CoV-2 spike open reading frame result in spike protein variants that may cause thromboembolic events in patients immunized with vector-based vaccines. It says we found as a severe side effect that occurred 4 to 14 days after vaccinations. Besides the CVST, which is the cerebral venous sinus thrombosis for one person, the SVT was also observed, another form of vein thrombosis. These events were mostly associated with thrombocytopenia and thus similar to the well-known hairpin-induced thrombocytopenia. Meanwhile, scientists have proposed a mechanism to explain this vaccine-induced thrombocytopenia, which we keep talking about. However, they do not provide a satisfactory explanation for the late thromboembolic events. Thromboembolic. That's got to be right. It sounds funny. Here, we present data that may explain these severe side effects, which have been attributed to adenoviral vaccines. According to our results, transcription of wild type and condone optimized spike open reading frames enables alternative splice events that lead to C-terminus truncated soluble spike protein variants. So they're discussing two things. One, that this is causing the side effects. And in fact, they're obvious and occurring in a pretty similar rate, but also the fact that people have already discussed the possibility of it causing variants itself. But the point is the vaccine-induced COVID-19 mimicry, which, by the way, is being diagnosed as COVID-19. Shocker, right? Weird. We see a spike after the injections, right? Weird. It's almost like they planned it. Well, remember that on April 30th, 2021, the Salk Institute, was it Institute? I'm trying to look real quick. So we've talked about this many times, but I'm just blanking on whether it was the Salk Institute or something. In any case, by Salk, it says, same point. The title, the novel coronavirus' spike protein plays additional role in illness. Again, proving this information in the study proved that the spike protein alone was enough to cause disease. That is a huge one. Not just enough to have a thrombocytopenia event or something like this. They're telling you the spike protein by itself is enough to cause disease. So that tells you that they were right. That what they're telling you is that this can lead to actual illness. No one's talking about that. And this is a huge one. A lot of people, I shouldn't say no, but in the independent media, this is everywhere. Where's the mainstream? If the spike protein alone can cause disease, is it not possible that the injection causes disease? Yes. But of course, the point is they're going to say, well, there's not a viral vector, so it can't. It's impossible. Okay, well, are you just ignoring the fact that they said the spike protein can't? Yes, they're completely ignoring that. They just pretend they know already and they don't look, just like Denny Rancourt points out on that Off-Guardian article. They're ignoring the science while screaming about trusting the science. Stupid. I mean, literally ignorant. Or it's willful ignorance, in fact. But here's one from December 2020. That's also a preprint. SARS-CoV-2 spike protein impairs endothelial function via downregulation of the ACE2 receptor. Again, this is just the spike protein. That's the point. And this is where it crosses over into your brain. It says, we show here, the next one's more in depth. We just show here the spike protein alone can damage vascular endothelial cells. Alone. Endothelium is the tissue which forms a singular layer of cells lining various organs and cavities of the body, especially the blood vessels and the heart and the lymphatic vessels. Clearly, this is telling you that the spike protein can do a lot of damage in your brain and elsewhere. Here's another one, not a preprint, December 20. The SARS-CoV-2 spike protein alters barrier function, and we've already talked about this one, in 2D static and 3D microfluidic in vitro models of the human blood-brain barrier. The results presented in this report explored whether damaging outcomes from the SARS-CoV-2 viral spike protein on primary human brain microvascular endothelial cells could be observed. Other studies are already showing that. It says first, using postmortem brain tissue, they show that angiotensin converting enzyme 2 or ACE2, a known binding target for the spike protein, is ubiquitously expressed throughout various vessel calibers in the frontal cortex. That's pretty interesting. Seeing as how the testing and the blood-brain barrier and the concept of whether, like, so if we're putting this into your body and this spike protein is seeking out, or specifically ACE2 receptors are, as it says, a binding target for it, doesn't that suggest that it would make it possible? And what they're saying is that that ACE2 is ubiquitously expressed throughout your brain, specifically your frontal cortex. That means this thing will potentially shoot for that area. It says, moreover, ACE2 expression was upregulated in cases of hypertension and dementia. Well, isn't that interesting? Dementia. So we're talking about the dementia discussion of people being either targeted or focused on, right? Eugenics discussion. So what they're telling you is that ACE2 expression was even Well, let's see what the term in general, upregulated, increasing the rate of level of, yeah, I mean, that's how I was, in general, was higher in cases of people who are stressed out or just dementia patients. So does that explain why a whistleblower video exposes dementia patients forcefully being vaccinated in a nursing home when 8 of them later died? When they left everyone else alone, but only wanted to inject the dementia patients in this nursing home? Does that suggest an experiment being tried out in this exact way to see if that in fact was the case? And they did. Or how about this one, where disabled people account for 6 in 10 deaths in England? Is this something that is in fact tailored to aggressively affect people with certain issues? Certainly a valid question, I would say. But it says introduction of spike proteins to in vitro models of the blood-brain barrier showed significant changes to barrier properties. So the introduction of the spike protein, which is being introduced into your body by this injection, which we're showing all over the place is continuing to produce. Just wait till we get to the amplifying part. And that is and they're proving significant changes to your blood-brain barrier and the properties of it. No one cares about any of this, apparently, because we're all crazy. Evidence provided suggests that the SARS-CoV-2 spike proteins trigger a pro-inflammatory response on brain endothelial cells that may contribute to an altered state of blood-brain barrier function. Inflammatory, altered state, just the spike protein. Gee, I wonder what all that stuff in the beginning with the blood-brain barrier is about. Somebody was being tested on. A lot of people were, my opinion. Here's another one. December 16, 2020, the S1 protein of SARS-CoV-2 crosses the blood-brain barrier in mice. Oops. And this is all there, guys. This is all out there from back before 2021. Severe acute SARS-CoV-2 binds to cells via the S1 subunit of its spike protein. We show that intravenously injected radioiodinized S1 readily crossed the blood-brain barrier in male mice. They're talking about a spike protein. Was taken up by the brain regions and entered the parenchymal brain space. IS1 was also taken up by the lung, the spleen. Remember the spleen being incredibly high? Kidney and liver. Intranasally administered IS1 also entered the brain through the nose. Shocking, right? Oh, that doesn't relate to anything we were just talking about. Although at levels roughly 10 times lower than after intravenous administration. So maybe that's why they stopped trying or stopped testing or who knows. All hypothetical in regard to why they were doing that. But this is very clear. This is not hypothetical. Very clear that the spike protein does cross your blood-brain barrier, go into your brain where ACE2 receptors are abundantly expressed, which can then affect your brain, affect how you think. Remember, we're also talking about in other shows, the current iterations of these ferritin nanoparticle injections that have already been shown to cross over the COVID-19 sphere that the Guardian wrote about years ago, when that being designed to literally control brain function and body movements. Of course, even saying that out loud makes people who don't want to believe this go, oh, this is so fake news. Despite the fact this is open research, one that's currently being conducted by Walter Reed Army Base. Right now. But we're all fake news, though, because people don't want to agree with what they've already convinced themselves doesn't exist. I think that was all in here. Last one on this topic. Again, just to reiterate, this is what the expert had to say. So even if you disagree with everything, one of the co-discoverers of mRNA technology says, I believe the shedding idea is that the vaccinated shed spike protein, not virus. It's certainly true that people vaccinated with mRNA vaccines do shed spike protein. He says, but in small enough amounts that it doesn't hurt anybody. But I think real world examples and the science we just went over makes that clearly not the case. But as always, it's up for you to decide. Here's what he says. Here's the science. Here's countering opinions. Come to your own conclusions. And this is why they censor us. But as I said, this is exactly what I have been reporting, and it's backed by science. This is the point. I was talking about this long before. Now, Twitter censors a man literally involved with discovering mRNA. Is he now an anti-science conspiracy theorist? Is Twitter the final arbiter of truth over the very experts themselves? Apparently so, because they just get to decide and remove people even as they speak truth just because it counters the narrative. And that's where this is here again. The science, a subset of scientific knowledge which cannot be challenged on the basis of empirical data or repeatable experiment because it has been, quote, settled by the consensus between the subset of, quote, experts who adhere to it. This is why they don't trust the science, which, again, is a stupid thing to say anyway. Pretty crazy. Now, one quick point before we jump over into the self-amplifying is the fact that this is also related to the we've talked about the convalescent blood, Red Cross. This is the study I already showed you from Oxford Academic. This is one of the other ones that Peter McCullough sent. But we've talked about this. I think this was a couple shows ago. Circulating SARS-CoV-2 vaccine antigen detected in plasma of mRNA of the Moderna vaccine, okay, of the recipients of it, which is very telling because that undeniably shows you why Red Cross didn't want these things and then why all the media came out swinging as fake news, fake news, fake news. That's not true. That's not true. And that's exactly what Red Cross's website said, which we'll show you in a second. Here's what it says. SARS-CoV-2 proteins were measured in longitudinal plasma samples collected from 13 participants who received two doses of the Moderna injection. 11 of 13 showed detectable levels of the spike protein as early as day one in the blood and after the first injection. So there's your proof to back up what Dr. Hodgkinson said. Hodgkinson said. It finds its way into your blood after less than one day. This is all right in front of us, guys. This is May 20th, 2021. Where was that on NBC News? Where was CNN on that one? Where was Fox News? I guess they just missed it in their extensive due diligence, right? This is clear. This is in your blood, which means it can spread in other ways besides just respiratory or even sweating through your glands. Plenty of others. But the fact is that this is then translated into plot. Think about right in this context of why it's causing blood clots, why it's causing thrombotic events or thrombocytopenia or strokes or heart attacks. Because exactly like these doctors we just mentioned talk about, it in fact, it builds up, it gets stuck in your system. And essentially, what do you call it? A coagulating event? It's hurting you, guys. And all of it's there for you to see. Here is what Red Cross said back on May 26th, you know, way back on May 26th, long time ago, you know. Individuals who have received a COVID-19 vaccine are not eligible to donate convalescent plasma with the Red Cross. Pretty obvious. Very clear. You cannot donate convalescent blood, which means, you know, for people recovering or I think recovering yourself or however that applies. In any case, they're telling you can't do it. Very clear, despite all the mainstream going, that's fake news. It's right there for you. But guess what happened, you know, this long time later, May 30th, 4 days later. Oh, weird. It's different now. The Red Cross discontinued dedicated COVID-19 convalescent plasma donations on March 26th due to declining hospital demand and insufficient industry supply. What does that even mean? Realize what the heading is. COVID-19 vaccine and convalescent plasma donor eligibility. The simple thing would be to say still that you can't because of the vaccine, as they clearly stated right here. If you've gotten it, you can't. Pretty simple, right? Now, somebody gave them pressure and said, you can't say that because it makes the narrative look bad. So now they pretend like, well, we're good now. We got enough. We're good. Right, so it went from, we're desperate to get more of this because we're troubled. And, you know, ask yourself this. When's the last time in your life you heard the government ever say, you don't need to donate blood, we're good, we got enough? Never. This is ridiculous. And what they're also telling you is that because of declining hospital demand, like that counters everything we're hearing right now. On top of the fact, it says insufficient supply. Same thing, really. So they're telling you we don't need it because not many people are in need. Well, the media says something of opposite Red Cross, but then it says sufficient industry supply. So how is it that you have enough when people, one, are not donating as much as you want before you were just calling for it? Like, anyway, the point is this doesn't even answer the question. Stating that you have enough so you're discontinuing it does not answer whether you're eligible, does it? That's not what should be right there. That's propaganda because they wanted to change the information because it didn't align with what they wanted you to hear, like the definitions of herd immunity vaccine and everything else. It's amazing to watch how quickly we see this happening. I report on this. 4 days later, they change it. Now, is that because I reported on it? Maybe. I'm sure other people did too. They are noticing what we're talking about, and they are actively trying to edit reality in real time. How ridiculous is that? Now, bringing this over into the self-replicating RNA or self-amplifying, which I posit are the same thing, and you can come up to your own conclusions about this. Thank you to JT for posting this for me. Really, really interesting. He says, self-replicating RNA in Pfizer, but not Moderna, which I found really interesting because, you know, I've been talking about these self-amplifying, replicating concepts, which are alarming to me. So I did my due diligence. Now, first, before we get into that, self-replicating RNA and the fact that his claim is that that's what Pfizer has. Let's reiterate really quickly what these things are and what they mean so people understand how alarming this is. Very quickly, 2 points in this. This is under just RNA vaccine, which, you know, under that is mRNA. And by the way, again, that I want to mention, I don't even know if it listed in here. Doesn't look like it. Just so we're all aware, and I talked about this in a previous show, and this is only because somebody shared this with me as well. I hadn't noticed this. It's right in their own documentation for Pfizer, for Moderna. They use what's called MOD RNA. I mean, I might as well just do it real quick. MOD RNA is not what we're being told. That this is a nucleoside modified messenger RNA. It's in fact a synthetic messenger RNA, not natural stuff. This is they're genetically modifying even the thing that they're telling you about. Of course, they don't call it MOD RNA. They call it mRNA, which you could play the game and say, well, it's a modified version of mRNA, so we're going to call it mRNA, but that's because they don't want you to know that. I find that very telling in the large discussion, and you can see right here, they're talking about specifically the biotech mRNA, right? That's what these are. You can look it up for yourself. MOD RNA, that's what this is. Just think it's interesting that they don't want to talk about that. Back to this. 2 points in here. One is, first of all, as I've pointed out before, the use of RNA as a vaccine tool was discovered in the 1990s in the form of self-amplifying RNA. Interesting. Like I don't understand why the discovery was self-amplifying. And now what we're being pushed at as the first iteration of the discussion of mRNA vaccines is simply not amplifying mRNA. Even though they discovered this one first. And now, weirdly enough, the idea of self-amplifying RNA is now being pushed as the next step. Maybe there's an explanation for that. That seems a little odd to me. In any case, self-amplifying, replicating is the other word, which you'll notice is not listed in here under self. Here's perfect. I didn't see this last time. Here is a citation for the discussion of self-amplifying, which lists self-replicating. I'm going to make this point going forward too, that I'm pretty sure these are synonymous terms or that they're being used differently for intentional confusion, certainly possible, but it's only listed down there, not listed up in this document about specifically all types of RNA vaccines. So I think I posit again, they're the same thing. Going forward, the last thing was self-amplifying RNA, saRNA, is a technology similar to mRNA, except the saRNA produces multiple copies of itself in the cell before producing proteins like mRNA does. Right. So if it's producing multiple copies of itself, that would suggest that it's producing multiple spike proteins, which is what the copies would do. And that's what it shows in their own documentation. Now, I argue that this doesn't make sense unless there's more that we're not hearing. Because what does this sound like? What does something that continues to produce uncontrollably sound like? Sounds like cancer to me. Not to say that they're the same thing, but this sounds like a similar problem. Maybe that's why it wasn't used first. Maybe there's something they're doing going forward. Maybe there's a mechanism that makes it stop. But guess what? That's what they're saying is happening now, and the evidence is showing that's not what's happening. My point in showing you this is only so you understand the difference between the two things. One does one time, the other copies itself apparently forever. Doesn't say it in here, but let's get into what it does say. Self-amplifying mRNA vaccines as of December 4th, 2014. Again, strange that no one talked about this stuff as the next generation future that they were talking about it as in the studies until it was something being shoved in our face. That's telling. Recent research in developing self-amplifying mRNA vaccines. Currently, non-amplifying mRNA vaccines are under investigation in human clinical trials and can be produced at a sufficient quantity and quality to meet regulatory requirements. So even back in 2014, they were already testing them, and guess what? They were failing. Failing. The previous iterations. Next one, 2020, July. Self-amplifying RNA viruses. As RNA vaccines, we've shown you both of these before. Preclinical and clinical applications of self-amplifying RNA viral vectors have proven efficient for vaccine development. Okay, why didn't we hear about it then? I mean, like, we were to a degree, I would argue, but it's odd that this was the going to revolutionize medicine and it wasn't really talked about until it was rushed forward. But it says the need for novel and efficient vaccines has become even more evident due to the global COVID-19 pandemic. Obviously, we already saw where this was going. The applications for self-amplifying. So again, ask yourself why this wasn't the first one used. Or maybe it was, and we're being lied to. Because this is clearly being tested July 2020, and they're clearly telling you that this is already preclinical, clinical applications have already proven efficient. So what changed? What happened? Very age. It's weird, isn't it? Now, here is the part that really throws me for a loop. This is 2014. Well, 15 February, published, introduced. Here's what it says. This is about specifically high effect efficiency, self-replicating RNA. That's what we're talking about. Now, here again, it gets into replicating versus amplifying. Stay with me here, because at the end, I'm going to show you that these things are basically listed in scientific discussions as both. But I want you to come to your own conclusion about that. That's why I'm doing it this way, because you'll see. So it says an RNA enzyme, and so we're clear, what they're talking about is self-replicating RNA, right? That's what this is talking about in the document, which I'll show you in a second. Replicating, self-replicating. So even if you want to argue self-amplifying is not the same thing, here's how they describe self-replicating RNA. An RNA enzyme has been developed that catalyzes the joining of these things we're talking about today and to form additional copies of itself. Some random thing we're talking about. But the point is, an RNA enzyme has been developed that catalyzes the joining of these things, whatever I guess the target would be, to form additional copies of itself, undergoing self-replication with exponential growth. That doesn't sound good to me in a human's body. The enzyme also can cross-replicate with a partner enzyme. Okay, something else in your body, resulting in their mutual exponential growth and enabling self-sustained Darwinian evolution. Okay, let that sink in for a second. What have we been talking about here? Of course, you know what this includes. We're talking about nanoparticles, lipid nanoparticles. This is the same concept. So we're talking about what they're telling us is something that continues to grow exponentially, enabling self-sustained Darwinian evolution. That should scare you because of exactly what we've been talking about that they have told us they're trying to accomplish. And this is the self-replicating conversation that apparently in their documentation is exactly what Pfizer already is. Don't forget about the Converging Technologies document we've talked about over and over, which I hope you'll read in its entirety. And I'll just show you this time directly from Wikipedia, where it tells you this is a 2002 report commissioned by the U.S. National Science Foundation and Department of Commerce. The report contains descriptions and commentaries on the state of science and technology of the combined fields of nanotechnology, biotechnology, information technology, and cognitive science by major contributions to these fields. Potential uses of these technologies in improving health, overcoming disability are discussed in the report, as well as ongoing work on planned applications of human enhancement technologies in the military and in rationalization of the human-machine interface in industrial settings and your life, because this is a milquetoast, watered-down description of what this says. This says blatantly right in it that we're trying to alter humanity, that we're trying to change what we are for the better, they argue. But what this is talking about here is making it seem like, you know, for industrial uses and for military. No, no, no. This document overtly talks about your life. It talks about, as it says, combining nanotech, biotech, information tech, and cognitive science. As I play every time, because this is what Klaus himself has said is the direction.
What the fourth industrial revolution will lead to is a fusion of our physical, our digital, and our biological identities.
So these are being combined, your technology with your body, This is what Corbett's discussing in a horrifying way of the extinction of the human race. And that's not an hyperbolic statement. This is Darwinian evolution in their minds. The idea of, I mean, that's exactly what he was saying in their minds. I mean, this is the survival of the fittest. They're literally weeding out the weak. And here we are talking about the discussion of a document where they're talking about altering evolution in 20 years using nanotechnology, which puts us literally on track, 2002, right now. And something self-replicating RNA, which we're talking about, is literally talking about altering our evolution. What do you know? How did life begin? Science News talks about. Well, guess what? RNA replicates itself indefinitely. That's what developed life for the first time. You recognize the Scripps Research Institute. We've talked about them. Now, and this is in 2009. Now a pair of Scripps Research Institute scientists have taken a significant step towards answering that question. The scientists have synthesized for the first time RNA enzymes that can replicate themselves without the help of any proteins and other cellular components, and the process proceeds indefinitely. Indefinitely. I guess they left that part out. But also recognize that they're interestingly noting that they don't need the help of any proteins. Maybe that's because they're arguing they need that because of the concept of, you know, COVID-19. That would make sense. But it's also just interesting. It seems like the spike protein is the thing that's causing all the problems. And maybe there's a reason that they've been working specifically on spike proteins. The Scripps Research Institute, which we just talked about, was working on spike proteins in regard to COVID-19 long before this. Or in regard to coronaviruses long before this. Maybe there's a reason that was happening. Don't forget, Scripps Research is also the one working on the new Ebola vaccine that's using the exact same discussion. Scientists at Scripps Research have unveiled a new Ebola virus vaccine. The team's design also included special protein segments that self-assemble tightly into a ball-shaped nanoparticle that support multiple glycoproteins on their surface. This nanoparticle-based structure presents the glycoproteins to the immune system, similar to common human viruses. And thus, the body has learned to recognize the severe... It's exactly what we're talking. Same thing. This nanoparticle design is distinctly different from other nanoparticle platforms. Platforms, because that's what they're building. And this is all tied together. Scripps Research, going back to the discussion of self-amplifying, it's all coming together, guys. And here is a very alarming discussion in regard to the point he was making. I had it lined up. It's so strange. There it is. This again is thanks to JT for sharing this. And this is really telling. So this is a study called Nano-Enabled COVID-19 Vaccines Meeting the Challenges of Durable Antibody Plus Cellular Immunity and Immune Escape. As it says, the RNA vaccines in table 2 include, and here's what they are: Moderna, Pfizer, Imperial College London. Maybe you didn't know they were working on one too, because we're sure we can trust them. Don't forget that they all, of course, include lipid nanoparticles, because that's, you know, of course these days you have to, right? It's not like we've never done this before, but that, of course, all the new ones are doing it. Does that show you something? Is it not possible that somebody could have made one using old technology that could have worked by now? No, because it's all about jamming in the nanotechnology in the new direction, the new platform. That's all this is about in regard to this discussion. Okay, it says the RNA vaccines you just saw right there include the use of non-amplifying or self-amplifying mRNA constructs, whereas the Moderna injection delivers conventional single-stranded mRNA for spike protein expression. The vaccines developed by Pfizer, Arcturus, and Imperial College include self-amplifying positive sense RNA constructs that borrow expression and replication elements from an alpha virus genome. Remember the alpha virus. Even the Imperial College one also uses the encephalitis alpha virus that encodes non-structural proteins assisting RNA capping, but alpha virus. Now, the point is, right here, they're calling it a self-amplifying RNA construct. Up here, they're calling it a self-replicating. Again, I argue that they're, if not very similar concepts with slight differences, they're the same thing. So what they're telling you right here in this study is that Pfizer is a self-amplifying RNA injection, which is exactly what we just talked about and exactly what we're concerned about. Right? So very telling. Here's what it says right in the table right here. Pfizer, biotech, lipid nanoparticle, self-replicating DNA coding for full-length spike protein in its formation, which means the Pfizer injection is replicating itself before it gets injected into the cell. And according to all the information we just saw, one says it's indefinitely. The other one says that it's enabling self-sustained Darwinian evolution, mutual exponential growth. Exponential means continuous. Isn't that telling? Well, one more thing before I keep going on this topic was what it said at the very top. And I found this to be chilling. And this is a sort of a small detour. Same study, nano-enabled COVID vaccines. It says right here, in addition to a brief description of the design features of unique cationic lipid and virus mimicking nanoparticles for accomplishing spike protein delivery. Virus mimicking nanoparticles? Come on, guys. Virus-sized transistors. Who are we talking about? Charles Lieber and his colleagues used nanowires to create a transistor so small that it could be used to enter and probe cells without disrupting intracellular machinery. These nanoscale semiconductor switches could even be used to enable two-way communication with individual cells. Charles Lieber, the guy who was shuttled away in the beginning of this in regard to something with China, never really defined. They charged him with something small, even though there's big discussion about treason. And that, where is he now? The leading scientist in the world making nanotechnology that mimicked viruses. And they shuttle him away right in the beginning of all this. And the idea that we're talking about the transistors, we just talked about this in regard to the idea of how these could be used to include transistors in regard to the lipid nanoparticles and the injections of these vaccines. This is not my opinion. This is more science that we're talking about that's new. So what this is showing you is that this is something very real. Like I've been saying from the beginning, that his work is literally being discussed in the context of a COVID-19 injection to accompany the spike protein delivery. What do you know? There's something to this. And the spike protein delivery is what's hurting you, what's making it go into the brain, what's continuing to cause blood clots. And they're using virus-mimicking nanoparticles. Is that not maybe what it is entirely? I don't know why this is not being discussed. If it's a virus-mimicking nanoparticle, doesn't that make sense that in and of itself could get out of control? I mean, good God. I mean, this is something that no one cares to talk about. Guys, this study is from 2021. This is from April 2021. Virus-mimicking nanoparticles. It says at the bottom, finally, we consider that the impact of nano-enabled approaches in the development of COVID-19 vaccines for improved vaccine design against other infectious agents, including pathogens that may lead to future pandemics. Oh, you mean the platform, the Moderna platform, the mRNA platform. That's what they're talking about. Same thing. Everything's going, you will never hear about normal vaccines again outside of the ones they already have until they adapt those to be mRNA adaptable injections. That I'm telling you, this is a direction they're taking under the guise that it's better for you. And are we under the illusion that's been proven? None of these are even approved yet. And we're already just jumping in this direction. Why? Because this was always the plan. They told us 20 years ago. They told us 8 years. They told us in 2014. They told us multiple times in this exact discussion. James Corbett's been screaming about this forever. Well, here, back to the point, is a different iteration of this from before. Development of a potential Zika virus vaccine using self-amplifying messenger RNA. This was in August 2020. You think this was meant to test it, work on another place? We describe the development of Zika vaccine candidates using the self-amplifying messenger RNA, the SAM platform technology. This wasn't new, guys. This is the point. This is why China could send the genetic code on January 13th, and 2 days later, Moderna was already testing vaccines. The only way that's possible if this platform technology was the entire point, and it was already there and set up. Pretty clear. And they're testing it on other things, despite the fact that this is still never even been done before. Molecular therapy. This is April 3rd, 2021. A single dose of self-transcribing and replicating RNA-based SARS-CoV-2 vaccine produces protective adaptive immunity in mice. So they're already testing these things in real-world settings. In the lab, sure. But this is happening. So is it then not possible that the very groups, I mean, look, again, this is the joke that if you would have said this in 2020, that is it not possible this could have leaked out of their lab? They would have been like, ha ha ha, you're so stupid. What a dumb conspiracy theorist. Except now they're all going, ooh, but this lab leak is a valid theory. So now if they want to dismiss your discussions of whether something could leak out of one of these experiments, they're dumb, because that either means that they're lying about the belief that that's there for some agenda, or they literally can't put two things in their mind at the same time because they don't want to believe this. If it leaks out of a lab and that's possible, then you can't dismiss that this could leak out and something that could then spread. If it's self-amplifying, self-something that continues to grow, that sounds like an alarming thing, especially when it's a genetic therapy technology that we have yet to fully flesh out. But it goes on to say, the vaccine encodes an alpha virus based replicon. Remember, we just talked about that, right? That's what these are based on. This is based on alpha virus. So is exactly what we're talking about here. I mean, I'll just show it again. This is the point. Going forward, it says, and the SARS-CoV-2 full-length spike glycoprotein. So here we go. So just jamming these spike proteins in every aspect of this instead of trying it in different ways. There's a reason that's the uniform thing right there, even with different types of vaccines or injections. Translation of the replicon produces a replicase complex that amplifies and prolongs SARS-CoV-2 spike glycoprotein expression. Well, that sounds great. Prolongs the thing that's hurting everybody. Let's make sure we keep it going. Isn't that the whole point? The self-transcribing, replicating, continually creating spike? Yes, that's not what we should want. And all the science around this topic is clearly showing you that. There's not some counter discussion about why the spike protein's not dangerous. They're just ignoring it all, guys. Is that called trusting the science? Finally, single lunar COVID-19 vaccination. So more versions of this untested, clearly unsafe in technology in regard to how they're using it are already being built. We haven't even yet approved a single one of them. And they're making more of them already. How much you want to bet the next ones get emergency use authorization too? And you know what? That continues to mean that they're prolonging a state of emergency that doesn't exist anymore. Every 90 days, trust me, I have that marked in the calendar. The next time, a day before the next state of emergency is about to go up around COVID-19, I'm going to scream about it. Because they're going to renew it, I promise you. Because if they don't, they're going to lose control of all of this, at the very least make it all illegal, which they probably don't care about anyway, but it gives us more standing ground. But finally, the lunar COVID-19 vaccination at both 2 measurement and 10 measurement doses completely protected human ACE2 transgenic mice from both mortally and even measurable infection following SARS-CoV-2 challenge. The reason I'm pointing this out is to recognize yet again, even in a study that's not being, you know, arguably not being rushed about something new that's being done, they're not even trying to find out transmissibility. Measurable infection, mortality, even in and of itself, does not show whether or not it can be transmissible. Isn't this interesting? This is exactly what all the rest of them are doing. Why don't they want to know whether, because I think the point is that this one doesn't stop transmission in regard to what we're really talking about, but also is transmissible in and of itself in the ways we just discussed. So if you study whether or not this thing is stopping it, you're going to find that it's creating it. Think about that. Hence, all the new studies are not even trying to find out injection or whether it stops transmissibility, knowing that we know that it doesn't, simply because that seems to be the point. My opinion. Here is an interesting one. This gets into the difference between the two of them, and this is coming from Johns Hopkins. What's interesting is these are the first RNA vaccines that have gotten this far in the process. I guess there was a lot of work done. This is a question leading up to the moment that made a sort of perfect moment for these to try. Is that right? Like, of course, here's a lob, spike it for everybody. Clearly, this is not the reality. Like, they failed and failed and failed and failed and then jammed this through with absolute irrational rush. But it says, that's right. Probably for the last 10 years, people have been working on these. Okay, that doesn't mean the safety trials were rushed or could need. I don't care if you worked on this for the past 100 years. That has no bearing on how fast the safety trials go. But this is the argument being made. All the media says, no, they did it for 10 years. That's why it went so fast. These are children. Either if they believe that, they're really ignorant. I don't think they believe it. I think they know they're lying to you. You could work. Think about it like this. Vaccine technology before this has been around forever. Doesn't mean they rushed the safety trials. Right? I mean, it's just plainly obvious. But here it goes on to say, there are two versions, just two, according to this information. The current two vaccines that we're dealing with use just the messenger RNA. They're also a version that uses self-replicating RNA, where it also has the information needed to copy that RNA, so you make more copies of it. They've been worked on mostly for cancer vaccines, but which is interesting, is it not? It seems like the opposite of what you'd want. Both self-replicating and non-self-replicating have been explored for quite a period of time for, okay, point is, they're the same thing. Just to make sure that's clear. That's just the way that they frame it as replicating, amplifying, same concept. I bet you there's some small deviation between how they can be applied, but if they're saying there's only two kinds, obviously we know that there are self-replicating and we know that there are self-amplifying. And we know that there's non-amplifying and non-self. So that would either be four of them or they're the same thing. Very clear. Self-amplifying RNA vaccines for infectious diseases, October 22nd. Vaccinology is shifting towards synthetic RNA platforms, which allow for rapid, scalable, and cell-free manufacturing of prophylactic and therapeutic vaccines. Exactly. That's why it's not shifting. They are shoving it off the cliff into this direction of platforms. Do you think that's a coincidence? Do you think it makes sense to suddenly shift into a new medical direction in the middle of a pandemic? This is how stupid they think we are. I mean, recognize that. They did this because it was the plan. Whether that means it was the plan before COVID and they just used it, or it was created to do it. Your choice. It's very clear if you're just showing discernment and thinking logically here. Or, you know, the alternative would be that they rush through a new technology platform for the future of medicine during a pandemic where they were struggling and failing in every way. Certainly makes sense. And that means we can trust that platform because it was well built. This approach may enable a quicker response to emerging diseases outbreaks, which is their sell point, as is evident from the swift pursuit of mRNA vaccine candidates for COVID-19. Both conventional and self-amplifying RNAs have shown, there it is, they're talking about both of them. But also the fact that what they're saying is that the way that they rushed out the COVID-19 vaccine is an indication of how we're going to do this going forward. It shows you how fast we can do this. They're not even concerned with whether or not it's dangerous. Ah, son of a gun. I think I remember where these were. I think these are the same thing. Okay, good. Oh, good. Oh, good. I've got this here. So this was a document that I've shown you before, an update on self-amplifying mRNA vaccine development. Here it says, currently, there are three major types of RNA vaccines: conventional, non-amplifying mRNA molecules, base-modified, non-amplified mRNA molecules, which incorporate chemically modified nucleotides, and self-amplifying mRNA that maintain autoreplicative activity derived from RNA viruses. Now, the point is that there's no replicating in there. It's all amplifying. Same thing. But they're telling you that these are being worked on and this is happening and it's coming your way. And nobody wanted to talk about this outside of being in danger. Like, I argue if nobody had picked up on what these were, they probably wouldn't even talked about it. Maybe just in a way to make it seem like the new direction we're saving you with. But the point is, it says, self-amplifying RNA is beneficial compared to non-amplifying as it maintains the advantage of mRNA vaccines, such as rapid development. Again, the faster we can pump this crap out and we're happy. Who cares if it hurts you? Module design and cell-free synthesis, but requires a lower dose of RNA due to the self-replicative properties. Right. So I guess this was the part in the beginning, which RFK Jr. points out, of why these were a problem. Because they were hurting people, because they would inject them and they didn't know the dose right. And they would just probably populate until it hurt people. People died. Children died. Here is the conversation. I thought I had the date highlighted. I usually do. That's strange. Oh, here it is. I guess not. February 4th, 2021. Four things about mRNA COVID vaccines researchers still want to find out. I thought this was interesting. These vaccines deliver mRNA, which is actually modRNA. Again, that's a dishonest thing to say because it's not what it is. Coated in lipid fat into cells. Once inside your body, remember, this is the point that at this point, it would be the modifying one would continue to make more of them. Once inside your body, it uses instructions in the mRNA to make SARS-CoV-2 spike proteins. The immune response protects around 95% of people vaccinated, they say, with either vaccine from developing COVID. Not true. It does not. If you say protect, you're lying to people. It lessens mild to moderate symptoms. That is not protection. I can't even, and again, I can't even say that that's even true. That's what they're saying. Evidence in the world seems to counter that, and scientists are pointing that out everywhere. Right? But who cares? Just keep saying 95%, even though, in fact, their follow-up said 94. So you're off anyway, but I guess this is February, so maybe that's before it, but whatever. It says, such mRNA vaccines have many benefits. They're quick to design, right out of the gate with that one. That's all. We're fast. We're fast. So once the manufacturing platform is set up, mRNA vaccines can be designed to target different viruses or variants very quickly. The vaccine manufacturer is also fully synthetic. Okay, wait a minute. Did they just not? So it says they have many benefits. I expected a list. Nope, they said quick to design. So it's great. And here we go. What are the many benefits? Oh, I guess that this fast. That's all they said. Isn't that very telling? I find that to be ridiculous. And again, to end this section, remember, this is currently happening. Not just the other ones we pointed to, but the fact that the ovarian study, but the fact that they are right now testing self-amplifying injections. Right now, on chimpanzees, in regard to be used on human adults. That's how they're recruiting for it. Last posted since May 28th, 2 days ago. National Institute of Infectious Diseases. They are testing something that has the potential to grow and then shed and grow again. As we've already pointed out, if these spike proteins can shed, as we just told you, and as the experts pointed out, as the science showed, then they can also continue to do so. And then they can find their way into somebody else and then continue to self-amplify. This sounds like a very dangerous thing to me. Talking about Dell Bigtree discussing a human extinction level event, these kind of things scare the hell out of me. And they just don't care. This is all at all cost driving for altering evolution in 20 years is where we are. Scary. Darwinian evolution is exactly what they use to describe these exact injections. Just in case we forgot. Resulting in their mutual exponential growth and enabling self-sustained Darwinian evolution. That's what we're talking about. I don't know why that wouldn't scare everybody. Now, finally, I got a couple more points, but I'm going to go through this reasonably quick. Here is the injection side effects, just the ones that I want to pull up today. There's always so many of them. I mean, a lot of times I put off a lot of these horrible side effects just to get in all the data because we know the side effects are there. But search for it. What you got to do is search outside of Google because we all know how broken Google is today. You can't search for anything. I don't want to try and experiment with it. I could do this later. But it's unbelievable that you can search for something very specific around something, you know, moderately related to some kind of virus discussion, and you'll get 45 pages of COVID-19 stuff. That's not even close to what you search for. In fact, what I was searching for was maybe, you know, smallpox side effects. And you only get stuff from today. Why? Because they don't want you looking at that stuff. They don't want you to understand this stuff. In fact, if so, you can search for the exact title of some of these websites and it won't come up because they are actively controlling what's happening. Google is broken. They've broken themselves in order to achieve what they think is their objective, which is to control the way you think. They've broken it. It's just ridiculous. My point in saying that is I was going to say just search for the side effects, but you need to go to places, you know, your social media platforms is where I see this stuff leaking through. The Twitters and the Gabs and the Parlors and the places out there where people are posting this stuff. And then you can do your due diligence and go back, you know, trace it back to where it originally came from. And so you don't just post a screenshot, right? But here's some horrible stuff. More deaths reported after the Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca vaccines, which I think is being focused on, as we've talked about. They have clearly been dumping all these ones out in the Vayer's discussion while clearly holding back the Pfizer ones. Plus researchers link AstraZeneca to strokes in young adults. The AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson COVID injections came under scrutiny again this week, as more reports of deaths, largely due to blood clot disorders, you know, very rare blood clot disorders, surfaced in Belgium, Canada, Greece, and the new report linked AstraZeneca to strokes, which we've talked about, the myocarditis, 18 young people in I think it was Connecticut, if I remember correctly, I might be wrong. But it's totally rare in Belgium and Canada and Greece and the United States and all over the grid. Totally rare, though. You know, this is how insulting it is. I'm not saying that it's not, you know, maybe you could literally call it statistically rare when you're talking about 300 plus million people. But in the context of risk, it is not rare at all. And we all see this. This is why 20% of the entire VAERS system is right now clogged up with COVID-19. And they'd pretend like that is only a bunch of anti-vaxxers sharing this. Let me ask you this. If more than 50% of this country is currently resisting that injection, you guys are the anti-vaxxers, or whatever you want to call it. These people, this is the majority. Talk about it's a democracy, right? Yeah, right. If it's a democracy, then you guys wouldn't be in control. The point is that I'm not even talking about anti-vaxxers the way they claim it. I'm talking about people who are aware of the reality and are concerned about this single process. Plenty of us in this community right now, in fact, support vaccinations. You know my opinion on it, but people right now from all walks of life are standing here going, this thing is dangerous. And I might be over here going, so are the rest of them. They might say, well, I think they're all safe, but we all agree this one is dangerous. And this is why they're scared right now, because this isn't some partisan thing they can push into wedge issues. We are all very acutely aware of this, and hopefully it's because of work like ours. And they don't know what to do except go fake news, censor, because they're losing the narrative battle, which is incredible to me. But this is because of work of people like you. But we can see that this is, I mean, prolific is the wrong word, but in the context of risk analysis, I would use that. Here's another one. Before COVID vaccine, her son was a healthy athlete. Now he can barely walk. Now, Cherie Romney says both her husband and her 17-year-old son suffered from these very rare serious blood clots and were hospitalized after receiving COVID mRNA vaccines. Very rare, but happened to both her son and her husband. I recommend you, it's a podcast. I recommend you listen to it. It's heartbreaking. And these people are being called crazy anti-vaxxers for suffering after trusting the government. I already showed you this before. I showed you this, in fact, on his pages. So you can, I never want to say that. Don't just trust me. Do your due diligence. Look this up. But I showed you this in a previous show directly from both the page on the right and his actual platform where he posted these. But this is a sad example of a mocking, belittling, patronizing doctor who's coming out and posting his vaccination because he's been convinced that anybody who's concerned is an idiot. Real great doctor, right? I'm not even trying to disparage this person that's dead. But the idea is that people out there, doctors out there that do not listen to their patients are bad doctors. But this guy says, I did it for the free orange juice. I'm pretty sure that the needle was like a foot long. Good news is that I didn't feel the microchip going in, but I can hear local radio stations now. Ha ha ha. Second dose. The microchip is working just fine. My mind is slowly being taken over by the hive mind. We're just fine. Resistance is futile. Ha ha. And then he dies, which is unbelievably sad. And of course, as I keep saying before, we need to be the better people, guys. In no way should, I hope no one even had a moment where they go, ha ha ha, he got what he deserved. Don't be that person. Be better than that. Even if you did feel that way, learn from it. Grow from it. Don't be those people. Be better than them. You know, just show your integrity and let it exude around these people so they can act like you're an idiot and you're the one walking high above them, showing them the studies, showing them the proof, not lashing out, being a better person, being a better researcher, just being better. So things like this, it should make you sad. It should make you sad that we couldn't get to Mr. Flanagan before he was blinded by the propaganda and died because of it. Or let's put it this way, died after these two injections. And with all the evidence around us, it seems pretty clear that it's a fair bet that it could have killed him. Nobody cares, though. And even the people disparaging you for asking questions, you're a fake news idiot, are the ones still also having trouble. Look at people like Chelsea Handler. Look at Jimmy Dore. These people are right now struggling through all this stuff, struggling with their side effects, realizing that we were right to a degree. And they've been the ones pushing this for all the way up until now. You know, and this is the, and I'm not even trying to disparage. My point is that people are dealing with it personally. And some of them are still just going, do it anyway. But I believe some of these people, maybe like Dore himself, are beginning to see the reality, are beginning to recognize that we have been showing this. And I'm not talking about me in particular, but just the community, shoving it in his face for this whole time, showing, God, look, this is not opinion. These are scientific studies. These are reports coming directly from doctors. You can't ignore this stuff. Now, here's what we're also seeing. Ray Armat, PhD, points out, this is an image for teenagers, to coerce, to manipulate teenagers. It says, even if you're for injecting teenagers, which makes you a bad person because there are zero risk, and this thing clearly has risks, that means you want them to inject it because of your fear. That's ridiculous. It means you don't care about the children at all, in fact. It says, with fast-track genetic technology, think says, when is the last time countries offered free $60 tickets to motivate teens? You remember them doing, have they done that for weight loss? No. For health checkups? No. For getting good grades? Not that I remember. For fitness? No. Nature conservancy? No. Pregnancy avoidance? No. I guess it only matters when they want to force an unapproved experimental injection in their arm. Well, here's what they're doing. Teen vaccination night. Right? So you understand, remember that if you're 12 or was it 12 or up, you don't need, or no, actually, I think it was something like 5 or 6 or up in certain locations, you don't need parental consent anymore, even though that's a undeniable crime right now in US law, right now in international law, but they don't care because emergency means they can do whatever they want, apparently. Emergency democracy, hooray, right? But they're telling you, come on in, teens. Just get the Uber. You don't need your parents. Come on, we'll give you ice cream. Come on in and we'll let you get injected along with your friends because we're making this a social pressure concept. Because we all know how we've always told you to accept pressure for experimental injections, right? We always taught you in school, right? Go ahead and try those experimental drugs. It's good for you. Let the pressure work you in, right? Think about how weirdly counterintuitive this whole thing is to everything you've been teaching children from your dare and drugs and don't try it, you know, say just say no. Now it's like, don't listen. Come in and do it anyway because government says. It's sickening the way they're doing this and shows you how desperate they are. And here's what they're ignoring, right? So come on in, teens. Just get this thing. Get this thing while you're on a roller coaster and out, you know, at a park. Because we'll pretend for a second that Six Flags has all of the medical equipment they need to deal with severe events. Of course, those watch this show know I bring this up every time. Because the FDA document, this one, in fact, I'm not going to go through it, clearly states throughout this document that there are required to have the necessary medical equipment to deal with all possible severe adverse events or events in general, which means death, which well, I mean, they list themselves. Death is always possible. But what have we seen? It's heart attack, stroke, anaphylactic shock. Are we going to pretend like Six Flags has that medical equipment? They don't. Or let's just even say they do. What if it happens on the middle of the park where no one's around them? What if he's on a roller coaster? What if he's on a Ferris wheel and he passes out of the top of it and falls out of the road? I mean, this is so ridiculously irresponsible and dangerous. It makes me sick. It really bothers me because they're doing what is, in fact, fundamentally dangerous. Like I point out with Publix or Walgreens or the Waffle House or in these places that were, in fact, giving injections, they never had the equipment they needed, nor do the drive-thrus. Because things like this are happening and they don't care. Mississippi State Department of Health, an official alert. May 28th, increased cases of myocarditis and pericarditis after receipt of the mRNA injection among adolescents, predominantly among male adolescents and 16 years or older. Onset has been within 7 days, several days, several, three, after mRNA injections, more so after the second dose. No similar increases, this is telling, have been seen post-receipt of the Johnson & Johnson. Well, what do you know? You know what this is telling you? At least possibly, it's the mRNA ones that are dangerous. If they're not seeing increases here for children around the non-mRNAs, which is why they included that, and it's which is why they specifically include the idea of mRNA, then they're telling you that in their mind, Johnson & Johnson is not the problem, that non-mRNA are not the problem. Exactly. Now, that's not to say that Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca aren't problematic because they also have the same issues with a lot of the same stuff we're talking about. But I genuinely believe that they're trying to protect the mRNA platform because that's not how these ones operate. But in any case, here's Mississippi State Department of Health. You know, that totally anti-science fringe conspiracy theorist group that are clearly telling you that this is a risk of causing heart problems in children or at the very least adolescents. But sure, let's rush out to Six Flags and just do it willy-nilly without your parents, because that's good times. Never in my life have I seen something so nefarious. And I mean that, guys. I still mean that in the context of what I've seen personally, because this is right in our face. There's plenty more nefarious stuff that I've even reported on in regard to, interestingly enough, at the Franklin rally I just spoke at, Landon Starbuck, I believe, spoke, and she's a big proponent of fighting human trafficking and child trafficking. And she made a great point about how this clearly connects with what's going on today and how right now child trafficking is higher than it's ever been and no one's talking about it. And right now it's happening under the guise of COVID-19. Just like in wartime on overseas and you know, destabilized countries, are these are the groups that go in and do this, and we've proven this. So it's happening now because this is, what is it? What is this if it's not a wartime we're in right now? No one's paying attention to this stuff. She made a great point. Now, bringing this over to the White House, admitting these things for you. This is what's so incredible to me, that they can simultaneously tell you that we're all conspiracy theorists for pointing out the obvious listing of these problematic side effects, and then they put out something like this. Let's look at this first. Here's what they say. Fact sheet. President Biden to call on all employers to provide paid time off for employees to get vaccinated. Well, that sounds like, okay, well, why would you need time off to get vaccinated? Right? If it's just a sore arm, well, okay, well, that's because people are struggling. And what they're admitting to right here is that people need time, weeks, if not longer. Look at Chelsea Handler. Look at the rest of people we just talked about. Weeks. Which is not okay. Which is really, really crazy dangerous and scary. And they're just like, nah, you're good. It's all good. You're fine. That means it's working. Tell that to the lady that had 14 anaphylactic shock episodes and fell down the stairs and broke her wrist and her leg and still goes, take it anyway. That person didn't need to be at home. The point is that this is something that is clearly causing long-term stuff and needs to be watched, or I would argue not taken at all. But here's what it says. President Biden is calling on every employer in America to offer full pay to their employees for any time off needed to get vaccinated. So, Ron, you could argue maybe they want to take the day off to go do this, which, by the way, you could easily do after your work or on the weekend. That's not what they're getting at, but that's what they're trying to conflate here. Yeah, give them that day off so they can go do it for everybody else. Nope. It says, and for any time it takes to recover from the after effects. They've invented a new word, after effects. You know, like this little fuzzy fun stuff, you know, my after effects were good. Nope, they're bad. After effects means bad stuff, you know, like vomiting and chills and shakes and anaphylactic shock and strokes and heart attacks and all that stuff. Oh, you know, normal after effects stuff. They're clearly, and this is a huge thing, they're putting aside millions of dollars for people to take time off because they're struggling. It says he will announce a paid leave tax credit that will offset the cost for employers with fewer than 500 employees to provide full pay for any time their employees need to get a COVID-19 vaccination or recover from that vaccination. What? Recover from the vaccination. Guys, this is so far. I mean, this is what someone needs to do is take the conversations we had about general flu injections from 10 years ago or even right before this and compare it to the way they're making this look normal. This is crazy. If somebody had to be hospitalized for after a flu injection, that's obviously bad. If somebody had to be bedridden for weeks after getting that, it's obviously a problem. If you had to recover from it, everybody would have stopped taking it. It's not this. We have been warped to make this normal. It says no working person in this country should lose a single dollar from their paycheck to take time to get the shot or recover from it. Oh, great. So you're willing to spend our tax dollars to fund people to go get something we disagree with, some of us. But then what about the people that lost a dollar and a lot more than a dollar during the unnecessary lockdowns? What about the people that are still struggling because their business is not there? I guess we don't care about those people. We'll give you a $1,400 check and then pretend like that's going to last you for the rest of your life, as they're already quibbling about stopping the things, the unemployment stuff they're even doing. There are people that are already getting evicted, even though they pretend like that wouldn't happen, from a house that they couldn't afford because of the lockdown. That, you know, we waited 2 months, so now it's your fault again. Yay, America, democracy, right? If this was happening even remotely in other places that they want to call, you know, despotic, authoritarian, whatever, they would freak out about it. Look at them taking their homes. Well, they just had a pandemic. Well, they would freak out. They are doing everything they would call out because they don't care about you. They literally don't. I, in fact, think they detest you because of your control over them to some degree, because of the way that they feel they need to control you to get their job done, what they think is their job or their agenda is a better way to put it. Of course they detest you because they don't like having to go through you. But it's telling you that there no person should struggle because of this injection. Well, God, what about everything else you've put them through that you didn't pay them for? It's just, this makes me frustrated that the people can't see how insulting this is to everybody. But it shows you that they know this. And as I said, apparently the White House is acknowledging that COVID injection negative effects are prominent enough to justify paid leave for all those getting vaccinated, all of them, in order for them to deal with their after effects. But very rare, though. Very rare. Kidding me. Don't forget that, as always, we point out the HHS, Health and Human Services, and Harvard, in their own study commissioned by the government and the CDC, found that it was at most 1% of the total that were being reported to VAERS. And then on top of that, that these side effects are in fact pretty common, just underreported. Literally contradicting what the media still tells you today. And that was at a time when they were trying to set up a new VAERS-type system that would be responsive in real time, and the CDC just never engaged and never returned their calls, and here we are today. Because that wasn't totally intentional, because VAERS is easily dismissed. They like it that way. The point is, they're admitting to you that this isn't rare at all, that everyone gets time off because everyone is struggling. But as George Orr points out, problem, government spend billions for warehouses full of expiring vaccines that people don't trust or want, of your money, by the way, your tax dollars. Solution, $1.5 billion vax ad campaign, quote, science, quote, medicine. Now, this is actually an article from a while back that I already showed you, but I like the point. It's exactly what's happening right now. And he references this article that we showed you back in March. The White House is set to launch its $1.5 billion ad campaign. Remember, these are people that have already said no. You've already been like, no, 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 I don't want it. That's not okay for them. They don't accept your no. They just think no means you're too stupid to realize you need it. So we're going to keep bombarding you with propaganda and social pressure and coercion until you do what we've decided you need to do. And then we call that freedom. We call that democracy, free choice, because you chose to, but we coerced you and threatened you and attacked you and, you know, and but you chose it though. This is just Orwellian stuff, guys. This is coercion. This is mandatory campaigns that are framed differently. So they're spending your money to convince you of something you didn't want at a time when they're already expiring because we don't want them. And yes, this is really happening. Public health officials, in fact, when they realize that we're about to lose all these injections because no one's taking it, and they pretend it's because of infrastructure problems or whatever, well, guess what? Officials change the May 31st expiration date on AstraZeneca to July 1st. You know, why not? Let's just roll the dice. Why don't you make it 2023? Why not? This step is taken as Ontario struggled to get expiring doses in the arms of the store. You state this without any context, discussion of how wildly arbitrary that is. If it's an expiration date, that either means that you don't care about the expiration date, or it was an arbitrary lie to begin with to get people to think we needed to take it. Think about how crazy that is. And again, your money was spent on all this stuff. But here's what I said. So that means they don't care if injections go bad then, right? I mean, that's one option. They just don't care because we're going to just move the date before, of course, being coercively injected into people, which means goes bad, probably means it's even worse than it is now, or the date was arbitrary as a way to justify pushing them into your arm. Either way, this is one more absurdity in a mountain of unscientific absurdities in the COVID narrative. It's just getting that ridiculous. But don't forget, as they've tried to force this on you all the time, and get this injection, because we got to make everybody safe, because everyone's got to be safe for herd immunity. Well, have they still not told you on the mainstream media? I guess not. According to the science, May 27, 2021, this is on Nature, right? It's something you can't dismiss, according to their narrative. COVID, well, you probably make antibodies for the rest of your life. You didn't read that wrong. If you've had the natural, whatever they're calling this, whatever this is, they're telling you that you probably have antibodies for the rest of your life. They're telling you that it's in bone marrow. It says people who've recovered from mild COVID have bone marrow cells that can churn out antibodies for decades. Of course, that's in accompaniment of the one that we always show you, which is that the NIH also said that, also told you that they have lasting immunity that can be found after recovering from natural COVID-19. So are you asking the right question in your mind right now? Why in the hell would I even try this? That'd be the right question. Why in the world would I even need to try this when your risk from being hurt by this thing is 0.14%? If you're under 25, it's 0.01%. And it keeps getting lower, down to zero for children. So why would you take something that's verifiably causing blood clots, verifiably causing heart attacks, anaphylactic shock, and all sort of other things, verifiably undefined and unscientifically tested in the way they tell us it is? Why would you try it when you most likely have already dealt with this in some way, if you believe that's what's happening, and have antibodies for a lifetime? or the NIH tells you that you probably have lasting immunity. Why? When they're also telling you that this thing does not have, they don't even know for sure how long this lasts, if at all. And we're showing that people are either getting sick afterward or not showing antibodies at all. The only way that makes sense is if at all costs, they need to get this thing in your arm at all costs. There's no scientific validity to ignoring what this shows you. Antibodies for life, which, by the way, again, was exactly what we have been saying. Now, here is something quick I want to play to finish up before we do a little quick censorship discussion, is that this is an individual on a pro-mandatory vaccination guy on the left who is talking. It's in French, I believe, who mentioned something very interesting. And thank you, Kalimen, for pointing this out. Because what they're saying is mentioning pharmacovigilance under a discussion of a phase 4 safety trial. Take a listen, or really take a watch, because I'm going to pause it for the subtitles. It says, obviously, when we validate the effectiveness of a vaccine, it is done with tens of thousands of patients, is not with millions of patients. Which it was logical to miss. This is why in the development of a drug after a phase 3, which shows its effectiveness, which he's referring to these, even though I disagree with the concept of effectiveness, there are 7 mandatory phase 4, which is pharmacovigilance. We will report side effects, and behind it is the calculation, is the benefit for the population. We have on one hand an epidemic, which, and he goes on. Okay, so he's clearly discussing the concept, as someone who's speaking on this as an invited expert on this topic, of the concept of watching you, which we already know is the case if you watch the show. Pharmacovigilance in phase 4 safety trial. Have you heard about phase 4? Phase 4 is you. That's you. You're the one being watched using pharmacovigilance, and they're testing on you to see if they have side effects. And this is what they're talking about. This is what we've always told you guys, and this is what was listed in their documentation, that this would go on. As Whitney Webb wrote about, Oracle and the different discussions where they've already got contracts to watch you everywhere. What do you know? Fake news. All fake news. Oh, and this was, I had this just so I could tell you. His name is Frederick Lapostole. It says the National Academy of Medicine said on May 25th that compulsory vaccination against COVID should now be considered. We reported this to you. But wouldn't compulsory vaccination go against individual freedoms? And of course, this guy's going, no, vaccines is what we need. Press it on everybody, which is the sentiment right now. Very real. Now, bringing this over to a couple quick points before censorship. Danny Rancourt points out graph of COVID cult capture by country. And I'll show you that. 1 second, I want you to read what he says down here. Meanwhile, just a detail. Top science journal says, quote, COVID herd immunity is probably impossible. He says, nonsense piled on top of nonsense. Why are they doing this now? Because this is not going away. They don't want you to think about natural immunity. They want you to think about vaccine-induced herd immunity. That's all they're talking about. As it said, look, it says right here, even with vaccination efforts in full force. It's all about the vaccination, just like Israel told you, like all of them are telling you. So what they're doing here is trying to pretend, one, either that it's our fault as the anti-vaxxers, that this is never going to happen, or the fact that it just is not going to happen for other reasons in general, but trying to convince you that we need to continue to vaccinate, to continue to follow the social distancing and the masks and everything else. That's the point. And that's, look, after all of these injections. Realize even in Israel, where they keep screaming about how everyone's injected, only 60% has at least one dose, only 60, which means that's a less number in regard to both, we're only looking at about half the country, even in Israel. United States, we're looking at under 50%, one dose. So that means, again, easily 60% of this country are not fully vaccinated with this thing. Because you understand why it stops at one? Because people get this thing and basically feel like they're going to die and they never go back. That's why you have a lot of these children, pregnant women, regular people who drop out of the trial. And you see this number and they just omit it and don't talk about it again. Some of them got one dose, never came back. Well, that should be included, don't you think? It's just very telling. His point is simply that the higher the dose, the higher the people that are, as he puts it, cult captured, COVID cult captured. But here is what he posted I showed you earlier. I just think this is hilarious. I hope you guys will share the article. I read the science one. Here's social distancing. Dystopian name given to the arbitrary physical distance recommended by our, quote, experts or imposed by government to prevent, quote, asymptomatic spread should really be called, quote, physical distancing. But it isn't. Asymptomatic spread means the curious idea that disease is spread by any significant way by people who are physically well, regardless of all previous and most current scientific evidence, the reason for lockdown. It's just great. It's completely accurate. And I find it interesting that even people that probably agree with this stuff will find it hard to disagree with these things. But just read it for yourself. A great article. Here it is, The New Normal Lexicon. I have it in here next. Read it for yourself. It really is a lot. There's a lot of, it's a really well, I love this article. It's just a bunch of basically like definitions. I just love it. It's hilarious. Finally, in this part before the censorship, again, science advances because of deniers. And this is interesting because they're talking about like science deniers, you know, whatever, anti-vaxxers. That's the point. Is it what this clip is, and I'll play it for you, is it's very interesting as he's telling you that this is the opposite of science. The way that they're conducting themselves today. As Mark points out, and this is what he says in the clip, we're going to kill ourselves because of stupidity.
People talk glibly about science. What is science? People coming out of a university with a master's degree or a PhD, you take them into the field, and they literally don't believe anything unless it's a peer-reviewed paper. It's the only thing they accept. And you say to them, but let's observe, let's think, let's discuss. They don't do it. It's just, is it in a peer-reviewed paper or not? That's their view of science. I think it's pathetic. Gone into universities as bright young people, they come out of them brain dead, not even knowing what science means. They think it means peer-reviewed papers, etc. No, that's academia. And if a paper is peer-reviewed, it means everybody thought the same, therefore they approved it. An unintended consequence is that when new knowledge emerges, new scientific insights, they can never, ever be peer-reviewed. So we're blocking all new advances in science.
I would argue that that's potentially not an unexpected consequence. That sounds like if you want to believe in the, you know, conspiracy theorist, it's certainly possible that this has been a way that it's been co-opted and controlled. So only things that become new are the ones that are allowed or okayed by the people controlling it. You know, at the very least, it's unintended and it's created this that's then being used. But I always argue a little more than that. And also, it's interesting the comparison between academia and science. He's totally right. Science is the real, the study of the world around you, not the paper discussion of it, but that's what it's become, and that's because it's controlled.
Right. They can never, ever be peer-reviewed. So we're blocking all new advances in science. Yep. That are big advances.
Blocking them all.
If you look at the breakthroughs in science, almost always they don't come from the center of that profession. They come from the fringe. The finest candle makers in the world couldn't even think of electric lights. They don't come from within. They often come from outside the breaks. We're going to kill ourselves because of stupidity.
It's a great clip. It really is. And it's amazing, amazing points. You know, the idea. And historically speaking, he's absolutely right. Absolutely right. That historically speaking, look at even somebody like, even though this is a terrible example because of how propagandized this entire topic is, even just completely lied about, but something like Christopher Columbus, let's say, right? Let's just take the story that we're taught, which is completely fabrication. But the idea that somebody tries to go out to discover this, and because nobody wants to accept it, challenges the current status quo, which, by the way, is literally not even the truth. That totally didn't happen. The idea the world is flat and round, that was discussed long before he went out there. I don't even get into this. It's so crazy how our history is a big fat lie. But the point is that in the story, that people just were resistant because they didn't want to believe the new reality. You know, and this is the idea that, historically speaking, even in fable, that it's the person that challenges the status quo that is, in fact, the one that changes the new direction, that awakens new discovery. And right now we're at a point in our history where the powerful have completely I mean, take a look at some of these, you know, experiments or new inventions that get shelved. I mean, it's not even a joke. Like taking it right out of like Indiana Jones. Have you seen that movie? The clip at the end where I think it's the Lost Ark, where at the end they basically are rolling it into this huge warehouse full of nothing but wooden crates, and it's like this infinite warehouse. And they put the ark, you know, the ark of all things in a box and shove it in labeled like 1, 2, 3, 5. You know, just showing you there's an infinite example of things in this room that are wildly important. And while the point is, that's what we, and this is not even a secret, I'm just using that as an analogy. They table inventions based on politics, based on interest they hold in other things that are challenging that. So these things get shelved and put away, such as the person who invented the hemp, the machine that made hemp paper and turned hemp into pulp. That was completely shuttled away and hidden because it challenged the paper industry. Talks about the Hearst family and their industry in timber, and the very early on discussions of why hemp was bastardized and created into something dangerous, which then conflated cannabis in the same way, and they shoved it into the danger zone. It became illegal, even though they used hemp for everything, is because of politics. Right, this is how this happens. My point was, the man who invented that machine that turned hemp paper into pulp should be the most famous person ever. Because if we would have started doing that, we would have changed the planet. But here we are, cutting down entire forests and continue to do the same thing because we don't care about reality. We only care about politics. That's what he's talking about. And this will continue if we don't speak up. Lastly, here's the British Medical Journal. This is something that I've already read to you that I found out today was deleted. A doctor, I'm not going to go over it completely again, but if you want to look it up, just look up, you know, just explain what rapid response is for British Medical Journal. But these are responses that are allowed by other users of this platform, doctors primarily, that respond in engaging in these studies. Every right to speak on this stuff. This person spoke about their outrage, their concern about why nobody at the CDC was speaking up about the obviously overwhelming amount of side effects that they firsthand saw in their practice. That's it. And every single thing I think she said was accurate. Everyone, I'll read it to you right now. But before we do, here's what the editorial team just had to do on, and this is actually interesting. Wait a minute. That's not right. That's something that's weird. So this says 12/4. That's just incorrect. They must be a mistake because this is April. You know what it might be? This might be reversed because it might be in another place. It could be 4/12. That would make sense. Posted on April 2nd. This would mean it was censored on April 12th. I know. I'm just assuming. In any case, it was posted on April 2nd, 2021. It's right there. Now it's been deleted by the editorial team. Let's read what it says first here. This rapid response has been removed as it was being used. It was being used to spread misinformation and was attributed in a misleading way on certain websites. Okay, so we're clear. In no way are they even suggesting what that person said was false. Not even close. What they're saying is that because they stated things that we don't like being stated, even though they're true, and other people are pointing to it and misrepresenting it on Facebook, we're going to remove this doctor's right to speak on this platform. Because some idiot on Facebook misrepresented it? Do you realize how arbitrary that is? People do that all the time about things that I want censored. How about somebody over here? I mean, I'm joking, right? I don't want anything censored. The point is, like, okay, we have somebody over here screaming about why mRNA vaccines are working no matter what. They're the best thing in history. I disagree with that. So am I able to delete him because he's misrepresenting the reality? It only applies in the way they want it to go. They don't like the reality. It's causing vaccine hesitancy, like Facebook already showed you. So they literally censor the doctor who was speaking honestly. This is a perfect small microcosm of how utterly broken everything is right now. Forced in by the very people we're looking at right here. The government, the agencies, the regulatory agencies, around all of this, they have broken people's brains in regard to how science works, in regard to how this kind of thing should work. That we're literally going to remove your right to speak because somebody somewhere might misunderstand it. Good God. Well, here it is on the Wayback Machine. Lucky for you. I'm going to read it to you. And this will be the end, or two things after this. Dear editor, I have had more vaccines in my life than most people and come from a place of significant personal and professional experience in relation to this pandemic. Having managed a service during the first two waves and all the contingencies that go with that. Nevertheless, What I am currently struggling with is the failure to report the reality of the morbidity caused by our current vaccination program within the health service and staff population. So they're literally only talking about nurses, doctors, people in hospitals or care homes or whatever, staff and health service, not normal population. That's important. The levels of sickness after vaccination is unprecedented, and staff are getting very sick and some with neurological symptoms, which is having a huge impact on the health service function. Even the young and healthy are off for days. Guys, all of this has been vindicated by what we've already seen happen. He's just simply, or she, I believe it's she, is just simply saying, I personally watched this happen in my, where I am. It says, even the young and healthy are off for days, some for weeks, which here we are, it's happening. Biden just gave them all paid leave, and some requiring medical treatment. Whole teams are being taken out as they went to get vaccinated together. Yeah, but let's pretend like it's very rare, though. This is why Biden is giving everybody leave, because the majority are being taken out, as it seems here, for weeks. Mandatory vaccination in this instance is stupid, unethical, and irresponsible. Damn right. When it comes to protecting our staff and public health, by the way, I argue it's unethical, irresponsible, and stupid in any context at any point in time ever. It should always be your choice. We are in the voluntary phase of vaccination, and encouraging staff to take an unlicensed or unapproved experimental product that is impacting on their immediate health. And I have direct experience of staff contracting COVID after vaccination and probably transmitting it. All of this has been vindicated since April 2nd, 2021. All of it. We've already talked about this. They've even admitted it in real world settings. In fact, it is clearly stated that these vaccine products do not offer immunity or stop transmission. And she's right, as we've proven on this show. In which case, why are we doing it? There is no longitudinal safety data, a couple of months of trial data at best available, and these products are only under emergency licensing. Still, what is to say that there are no longitudinal adverse effects? Exactly. That we may face, that may put entire health sector at risk. Well, think about that. Suddenly, all the hospital workers and everybody are suddenly in trouble, or how about the kids at zero risk? Flu is a massive annual killer, she says. I actually disagree for other reasons, but leave it at that. It inundates the health system. It kills young people, the old and comorbid, and yet people can choose whether or not they have to get the injection, which had been around for a long time. And you can list a whole number of other examples of vaccines that are not mandatory, and yet they protect against disease of higher consequence. Exactly, which is why the UK calls it, that doesn't matter, I've showed it before, calls it no longer a high consequence infectious disease. The UK stated that in March 19, 2020. Gosh darn it. There it is. You know why I always want to do that? Like, I feel like I need to do it, is because there may be one person in the chat that goes, it's not true. It's not in the site. Now it'll be included in the show notes. As of March 19, 2020, COVID-19 is no longer considered to be a high consequence infectious disease in the UK. But Ryan, that's from March 19th. Well, it says it right here. It was updated May 12th, 2021. So they're telling you it's not a high consequence infectious disease. That's a fact. That's according to the UK. That's what they're telling you. Okay, so if it's not a high consequence disease, if it's causing all these issues, and there's another listing of things that are even worse, what are we talking about? As always, how about tuberculosis that killed 1.4 million people in 2019? 1.4 million around the world we're talking about. Where was the tuberculosis pandemic? It just doesn't make sense. And you all know this. But going forward, coercion and mandating medical treatments on our staff of members of the public, especially when treatments are still in experimental phase, are firmly in the realms of a totalitarian Nazi dystopia and fall far outside of our ethical values as the guardians of health. By the way, regardless of your thoughts on the history of that, there are people who are Holocaust survivors that are currently speaking out and saying this is worse than what we dealt with, the same as what we dealt with. I've seen more than one. Now, that can offend people out there all you like. I'm not the one saying it. That's the people who are Holocaust survivors who are saying they're feeling the way they're feeling. And here's what's even crazier. There are people that are calling them names because of that, like calling them bad people. Because it's funny how quickly they can turn on a dime. Suddenly, for one moment, they're the most protected people anywhere. You're not allowed to talk about that topic. Now, suddenly, the average people can call them anti-vaxxers because they speak out about their own experience. This is how desperate this whole agenda is. It says, I and my entire family have had COVID. This is the doctor speaking still. This as well as most of my friends, relatives, and colleagues. I have recently lost a relatively young family member with comorbidities to heart failure, probably because of the injection, guys. This is back before this was being talked about. April 2021. They've been given since January and before. That is my opinion being caused by the spike protein resulting from pneumonia, they say, caused by the COVID injection, which, you know, could be because of the mask as well, by the way, but this is different because the pneumonia and the thrush and all this stuff leads to systemic inflammation, which clearly leads to heart failure, on and on. So does periodontal disease. Very one of the leading causes of heart failure, right? Understand, but we don't talk about any of this stuff. That's all caused by the mask wearing. Despite this, I would never debase myself and agree that we should abandon our liberal principles and the international stance on bodily sovereignty, free informed choice, and human rights, and support unprecedented coercion of professionals, patients, and people to have experimental treatments with limited safety data. Do you understand that not even a moment of this is going off the path of what is very clearly documented? The most you could argue the Nazi comment, right? But this again is being backed up by people that are literally arguably, you know, people saying they were during the situation, or the fact that who would argue that this is totalitarian? They're saying everything we all think. It says this and the policies that go with this are more of a danger to our society than anything else we faced over the last year. What has happened to my body, my choice? What has happened to scientific and open debate? If I don't prescribe an antibiotic to my patient who doesn't need it as they are healthy, am I anti-antibiotics or an antibiotic denier? Is it not time that people truly thought about what is happening to us and where all this is taking us? Nope. Apparently not. Deleted. Gone. Editor disagreed. The editor doesn't want to think about where it's going. The editor doesn't care about the dangers. The editor of the British Medical Journal is just going along to get along. Delete. We don't care what you say, doctor. That's the world we're living in. That's the world, by the way, that Dr. Polyakova pointed out, or consultant, in any case, somebody who worked with these very people, pointed out exactly what, by the way, has later been vindicated by things that happened after April 2nd, 2021. They don't care. Did I download this or not? I'll do it real quick. Might just finish off with this. We'll just play this, show you this first. The silence from BBC News and Sky News is deafening after 1 million people marched for your freedom on May 29th. 1 million people. This was one of the hugest marches I've seen in a long time. Nobody talked about it, but we shouldn't be surprised about that, right? We shouldn't be surprised about that because that's what they always did about the yellow vests and about any other thing they didn't want you paying attention to, right? Always. It's frustrating, but it shows you very clearly that these are people that do not care about the reality when that reality comes up against their narrative. And pretty much in general, all the time. But this is what we should know by now. It's very clear.
I was the director.
Now, what I'm going to play for you here, I'm just downloading, is a clip that was shared by Nashville Angela, I believe. And this is a clip about a doctor, or specifically, I believe, somebody who works in the hospital. He says what he does, and you'll hear it. And for 10 years, managed their risk, I believe. And just because he did not want to take the injection, even though he's healthy, he lost his job. And it just goes to show you how incredible this has become, that these people are not doing something wrong. They're not even sick. But because they refuse to be injected with what is currently still an experimental unapproved injection, they're being fired. That guy he should sue and win a lot of money. Right now, it might not work. Somebody's telling me the audio is breaking up. Of course it is. Of course it is. Always happens. I don't know why. But to end on this clip, realize that this is what's happening to people that are standing up for you, or at the very least, standing up for themselves. Choosing to not just kind of go along to get along, not just to be, you know, to be swayed by the people telling you they know what to do, but deciding for himself that I'm going to wait. I know I hear your arguments, and you know what? Maybe even I agree. I'm not saying it for him or anybody else, but I'm going to wait because that's my right. Or you have the other extreme of somebody like us going, that's really dangerous and I can see the data and I'm gonna not wait. I'm gonna never touch it. None of that's being allowed. Even the people like them that are just going, I'm gonna choose to not take this right now because I don't need it. I'm not at risk. I'm not sick. And here's what happens. Now I'm gonna leave you with this. So thank you all for being here. Thank you for continuing to challenge the narrative and think for yourselves. I really just continue to be impressed with your dedication and your support for this channel, because as I always say, this wouldn't exist without you. You are the last American vagabond. This would not be here without your direct support. And you guys know how often infrequently I even say anything like that. How infrequently I say, here's my t-shirts you can buy, or here's where you can donate. It's down there if you want to see it. The point is that it's not about that, right? It's about the reach and the content. I will never push that in your face. And it's just because that's how I like to do it. But it's a model that scares them because I don't push it. And yet it's continuing to grow because people believe in it. So it makes me passionate every time I think about that. That's why it scares them, because this can't stop your passion for the truth. They may take this channel down. They may take the platform down. They may take my website down, but this will continue because you believe in it. Historically speaking, that is what scares them, right? That prolific belief, the fact that this is why in historical situations, they've so desperately tried to avoid creating martyrs, because it leads to that passionate belief that we're doing the right thing, that we can't allow this to continue. So keep fighting, guys, because the momentum is on your side. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
I was the director of corporate risk for the last 10 years at Houston Methodist Hospital System. I was terminated on April 29th after refusing to adhere to their brand new mandatory COVID vaccine policy. My position was not clinical. I never interacted with patients. And because of COVID, I'd worked from home effectively for the last year. It's heartbreaking to have this happen to me. My civil rights and liberties have been trampled on. I've been retaliated and discriminated against for choosing personal conviction and personal health choices over complying with this brand new vaccine policy that is an obvious violation of federal laws and the Constitution. I'm not against vaccines by any stretch, just ones that are experimental, unapproved, and where the providers, hospitals, and manufacturers are shielded from liability. And while Houston Methodist leadership continues to say the vaccines are 100% safe, these vaccines do have side effects.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Struggles we bear. Make you listen, McClain. See the struggles we bear. Nobody don't care. I'm stuck in my house.
Everything I've seen in the last 9 days, all the things that just don't make sense, the patients I'm seeing in front of me, the lungs I'm trying to improve, have led me to believe that COVID-19 is not this disease, and that we are operating under a medical paradigm that is untrue.
Where's the grave? injected with these same proteins. Not a single, to my knowledge, not a single vaccine manufacturer took heed of my warning to remove those unsafe epitopes from the vaccines before they formulated their vaccines, in spite of being emailed.
Wait a minute, don't take her away! Hey! Don't take her away! You bastard! You absolute bastard!
If you stand for nothing, you fall for everything.
It's the message.